Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This is the place where sports opinions collide, Dan in Sports. I'm your host, Kenneth Vienz. Joining me as usual is FIFO 24/7.
Say the 24/7.
Mr. Disrespect.
What's up, what's up?
Of the No Disrespect podcast. Make sure you guys check him out. BZ430 is
handling business.
Yeah. So handling he'll be joining business. Us later. But as you see, man, we still trying to figure some things out, innovate here and there. So we're trying the mic situation a little bit different this month. Well, this shoot. So we'll see how it go. And if it works, we'll keep it up. We'll go back to where we were, but I think it's going to work out.
Oh, yeah.
If not, there's another one I can get.
Always got to elevate.
Yeah, man. Just trying to give it clean, give you guys a nice, clean presentation, you know, as we stream this live.
Man, you know, we're trying to be media moguls out here, man. They know what's up.
Yeah, so, man, a lot to talk about in basketball, but obviously we got to...
The finale.
Yeah. Cap off the boring... I don't even know.
Was it that boring?
A lot of people said it was boring.
But that's a lot of people. We're not a lot of people. We're sports people.
I'll say this.
When I say a lot of people, I'm including sports people, too.
Yeah. The general consensus is that it was boring. Everybody recognized it as being a boring game. But it was intense, and there was a lot of drama because at the end of the day, you were still like, this is anybody's game. And, you know, for me watching it, and we all, you know, we had a little Super Bowl thing here at the studio, Dennis Studios ATL, and, you know, we all were watching it. And, you know, obviously we had a big debate, you know, on the show about Jared. Yeah, Jared Goff being top 10. That's been answered.
I am talking about the game, I think that's been settled, but
it definitely was boring. I think it was deserved 3-0 at halftime.
You was into the game. I was watching you.
I was into the game because that's what I'm saying. It was intense. It was some drama because here's why it was interesting. It was boring but interesting, right? Because what was going to be the story when it was all over? And I kept watching that game, and I'm like, okay, at some point, the Rams got to snap out of this funk. Like, especially at halftime, I'm like, okay, like, y'all got it out now. You know, and then they came out, and it was the same old thing. But not only that, the defensive performance, nobody's really talking about that, I don't think. But the Rams' defense
played lights
out, and they gave up a lot of points this season, too.
And here's the thing, right? Like, I said it during the game that, if you only give the Patriots 10 points, you're supposed to win that game.
Yes.
You're supposed to win that game. And here's the thing. 9 times out of 10, I'm right. Sometimes I'm just not right in the time. Meaning that the week prior, right, in the NFC Championship game, I said I was going to pick the Saints because I thought Sean McVay was going to get ahead of himself. He proved me wrong in that game. And I'm like, okay, maybe he is the boy. What's his nickname, Ken?
The good son.
The good son. Maybe the good son is the real deal. And maybe I was just hating. But then watching this and how this played out, and I think we all said it. The word that kept coming to me, it wasn't boring, but it was frustration. It was a frustrating game to watch because we know what we've seen from the Rams all season. And the good son right? We know that he gives you a lot of different looks, a lot of different formations, a lot of motion from formations. And then they're consistent in terms of running and then play acting from those formations, right? To kind of mess you up. We didn't see none of that.
He did none of it.
And then on top of that, I know obviously y'all was here. I was saying no huddle, no huddle. Yeah. Because in that third quarter, when they came out, they got a couple of first downs. Yep. And you can kind of feel the momentum coming their way. But then it was that boring play calling. They looked like a pedestrian offense that couldn't do anything.
Jeff Fisher-like,
right? Yep. And then when you get these first downs and you may have the right defensive player package in there to take advantage of them and force the Patriots to use a timeout, you didn't do nothing. Mm-hmm. Then you get one or two first downs, and it was three, and then after that it was three and out. Boom, you're putting the ball. That was what was frustrating to me, because in a game like this, we've seen Super Bowls, right, like struggle mm-hmm. in that first half.
Yeah.
AFC, NFC, we probably never played each other. You know, you got to fill each other out, just like a boxing match. But then that third quarter is when you come out and you make those adjustments and you start to see
the true colors come out. Yep.
And we saw the Rams again make a couple of plays. And you're like, okay, here it is. Mm-hmm. Then it wasn't. And then even from the Patriots' perspective, okay, we're going to get a – no, it didn't happen. You know, so it to me it was just frustrating. It was almost like an orgasm that you just couldn't get. It was like right there. Like,
you still thought it was edging.
It was right there, man. It was right there. And you go a little harder.
I would say this. If you were a casual fan, you hated the game.
1,000%.
Because it, especially going off of last year's game where you had like.
Oh, yeah. 41-38. Like,
this game was like, what the hell is going on? Halftime 3-3 or 3-0, whatever. That's not sexy at all. And then on top of that, the commercials and the halftime show, it's forgettable. But as far as being someone who does a weekly podcast on sports, on football, it was interesting to see that chess match because. What have we been hearing all year long? Like, every offense is what, you know, runs the league now. Quarterbacks throwing, 500 yards a game, 40 yards a game, 51-54 was a Monday Night Football game. But to see defense like that, like, that was, like, reminiscent of the old, like, that was the lowest scoring Super Bowl in, like, what, the last 30 years or something like
ever.
That.
Ever.
Oh, ever.
Yeah, so, ever.
It was interesting to see that. People talk about lack of offense. I just say that defense was just in height. You had Wade Phillips and Bill Belichick, two of the best defensive coaches ever, going at each other. That's what was exciting for a football fan. Now, as far as the golf situation, to me, both quarterbacks played horribly. Brady wasn't any. He didn't do anything spectacular except for that last drive.
But let me ask you something. Is it not, especially when you have an offensive guru type head coach? Is it not the head coach's job to get your quarterback into a rhythm?
No, I get that as far as the play calling wasn't Sean McVay-esque or, like, as advertised as, like, Sean McVay being this innovator that we've never seen before. But at the same time, could we also just say the defense was just that great? And I was mentioning it to you while we was watching the game. Their foundation is let's establish the run. Everything else goes from there, right? They never established the run. Mm-hmm. Gurley got off once every while, but he came out right after he get like 12 yards or 15 yards. They never really established the run, solidified that. Even the Pats didn't do that. Mm-hmm. So if they can't establish the run, their gadget plays don't work. You can't do a jet sweep or whatever with Robert Woods or whoever or Brandon Cooks. If you can't establish, because then they just going they already stacked the box.
But here's the thing though, like we seen McVay. Motion that jet sweep a couple of times. At some time, you got to pull the trigger and be like, we're going to run the jet sweep. You know, because that's the thing I love about football. It's all about the setup. We're going to show you this look, this package, this formation multiple times, and then we're going to run a wrinkle out of it. And we never saw the wrinkle. Nope. We just saw the base package. And that's what was frustrating for me. And from New England's side, they played New England offense. They didn't, and we know that they don't get big plays, but they dinked and dunked, right?
Ran the ball. They've done since they entered the postseason.
So to me, that's why it was frustrating. I think the Rams gave this up.
I can see that. Here's what I think. Sean McVay got our coach, but he outcoached himself.
He got ahead of himself. I was just a week early on him.
Yeah,
I was just a week early on him.
I wouldn't even say that. To me, it was
here's
just
why
more,
I say that. Here's just a little bit more context. I need to see Gurley have surgery, because if he didn't have surgery and he was 100% healthy like he's saying and like McVay alluded to in post game, then yeah, he did, because he thought he had something with CJ Anderson that wasn't working. He didn't use Gurley at all. It's the Super Bowl. He is your MVP. He's your best player.
There ain't no tomorrow.
Like, why are you trying to get cute now? You're not Bill Belichick. You don't have James White and Sony Michel and Burke. You don't have a three-headed monster. You got one. Use him. And he didn't. He had a bad game plan.
For me, it was more about, I think, it's hard to describe, because Sean McVay should be better. That game is not a good indication of what Sean McVay is capable of as a play caller.
But it should have been.
It should have been. But for me, it was just more about he just wasn't comfortable. Like, none of what we saw was him being comfortable.
Because he got cute. Because he...
Cute doing what? He didn't do nothing.
I think he tried to install an offense that the Rams were not comfortable running. You know, you hear the stories of the Patriots adding 8 plays before the game. And you hear the stories of Doug Peterson and his staff adding plays that they never ran before. It seemed to me, based on what we saw and based on what we know of the Rams' offense, that they had added a whole new damn offense. They didn't do anything. There was nothing signature about the Rams at all.
Did you see what was the one thing that we all called out while the game? That offensive line.
Oh, yeah, number 66. He was atrocious. I don't know his name, but 66 stood out. He kept getting beat every
that
play.
That offensive line was supposed to be top 5 in the league. And they got busted up damn near every other play. How can you call anything? And Goff, as soon as he does a 3-step drop back, he got some defender in his face and he got thrown away.
Well, that's the credit to Brian Flores.
I'm saying that's the reason why they were uncomfortable with the
New England's defense ain't played like this all to this level all year.
Well, that championship game, AFC,
they had moments, but that's what I'm saying. In the playoffs, yes, they stepped it up.
And even the whole game, because let's be honest, they're. New England's defense that entire game was on point.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever they wanted to execute defensively, they did so. And as an offensive guy, you're supposed to play on that. What are they doing? What are their tendencies? What are they trying to take away? When you are an offensive genius, you're supposed to figure that stuff out, especially by after the half.
Right.
Especially after the half. Because we live in 2019 now, right, where we have Surface Pros. Mm-hmm. You can see exactly what was happening, and you have to make that adjustment, and they did it. And now, again, the main thing was frustration. This is not how the Rams were supposed to come out here and look. Let's just be honest. We all thought, right, prior to the Super Bowl, we was all saying that the Rams were going to put up 20-some points. Mm-hmm. Everybody on this podcast, ain't nobody said, oh, the Rams were going to score 14 or less. Mm-hmm. Nobody thought that.
Let alone three.
The only thing I thought was the Patriots will have a 10-point lead. And that was the only thing outside of us calling the game.
And then they even missed the last damn kick.
They did.
Yeah.
You know,
they did.
Legatron.
But the only play that I would say, obviously Jared Goff had multiple bad plays, but the one that came back to bite him was a touchdown to Brandon Cooks.
That he missed.
Two of them.
Brandon dropped the other one.
He dropped. But that's not on the quarterback, right? That's not. We saying that he's top 10. You got to make certain throw. He made the throw that Brandon.
Yeah, that's the golf accuracy I've seen.
He dropped to top 15. So I'll say that he's still a top. He's still top 10.
He's still top 10.
I would say he's top 15 after that one.
But I got to give Brady props, and you know, we always sitting here. We all saw the drive, the one that led to the Sony Michel touchdown.
Yeah.
And we always like, oh, this is it.
It's going to happen.
Because he 18 yards to Gronk on a little wheel route. And I was like, oh, this is it right here. Because whenever he's in trouble, he go to his guys. It was Gronk, Edelman, Gronk again.
He had two big catches on that drive, too.
Yeah, it was Gronk. He knows. He did it against Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. On that game-winning drive, it was like, this the only – I know he's going to catch the ball. Yep. Or he's going to leave it all on the field.
My thing is, how slow – like, he don't run that fast. Like, how do these linebackers let him get around?
But the linebackers on the Rams aren't that good. They got Dante Fowler, but they got these other guys. I don't even know who they are.
And then the thing, too, is that Gronk is one of the – there's guys that – oh, what's the word I'm looking for? There's certain guys that are faster than what they look. And Gronk is one of the – and remember, Gronk has lost a couple steps with all of these injuries and stuff, but he's still faster than most linebackers.
And he got good separation. It was good ball placement. The linebacker never turned around to look at the ball. You know, he was just
as most trailing. Linebackers won't.
Yeah.
Linebackers are in training to be in pass coverage. They don't want that. Especially you're talking about like an over the top one. Mm. If they're playing zone and they can see it in front of them, that's different. But like I gotta run like this and play DB.
I can think it was like Bobby Wagner or like
Urlacher was good at it.
Urlacher was good because he played safety in college.
Even Luke Kuechly. Luke Kuechly's good.
Yeah.
Derek Brooks from Tampa way back in the day. You know, he could guard guys out there in coverage. But it's not many. You know, we can name in the history of the NFL how many linebackers were great in coverage.
Yeah.
It's not many.
Let me ask. Okay, so Belichick got a lot of flack last year, giving up 41 points. The Butler, you know, benching Butler. You know, Brady put up 500. You know, he kept him in the game. This was a Belichick win.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. It was 100%. All Belichick. You know what's interesting? Dante Hightower was not in the last Super Bowl, was he? He was out for the year because he got injured. He had a season-ending injury, I think, last year, like the start of the season. He was a big difference maker in this, as far as the middle of that defense.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Stephon Gilmore, he got a lot of
He's good.
A lot of respect for me from that play, for his the way he played. But those linebackers for the Patriots, those were ones that stood out to me.
And then let's also talk about the fact that they lost Patrick Chung, their best safety.
Again, like you got a backup safety in and you don't go at him. I don't understand.
They did, but he missed Brandon Cooks, and they had to get what's his name, McCourty, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He had to come across the field to just stop it. But if he would have found him earlier.
I don't know.
That would have been. They could have easily been up. I think the Rams could have had. It could have been 17-13.
If Brandon Cooks
catches that both touchdowns, that's 14 points right there.
I mean, it came down to experience. You know, it's obvious.
Yes, across all fronts.
Yep.
Not just the Todd Gurley's of the world, the Jared Goff's, but especially Sean McVay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is very interesting to see what Sean McVay's career trajectory goes from here. Right, because
and all those McVay
hires.
The Bengals just announced Zach Taylor. He already come out. He said, "I'm not Sean McVay." And I'm like, all right, set the bar low.
Yep, 1,000%. But it's very interesting to see like where his career trajectory goes now, because obviously the good son has been, he's kind of the Brad Stevens in the NFL.
Did this hurt him?
No, but it can. And that's what I'm saying. That's why it's very interesting. Let the Rams struggle next year. You're getting back Cooper Kupp. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, some of those defensive guys, you may not be able to keep them all. Understandable. Money's money. But if they struggle, especially they look bad offensively, they may not be the guy.
I didn't realize how big Cooper Kupp was to this offense. All season long, people have been talking about Cooper Kupp.
Because they throw in the Josh Reynolds.
But I
understand what you're saying,
But like... Out of all the offseason acquisitions that y'all made, like, it was Brandon Cooks. Now since season over, I'm looking at everybody like, Brandon Cooks, was you worth that $80-something million?
No.
He had 120. He did drop a touchdown.
He did. But here's the thing, though. I think that, especially in football, right, outside of the quarterback position, the majority of the time, everybody else is just kind of like a specialist. Brandon Cooks specializes in taking the top off. But he's not as effective if you don't have guys running that underneath and intermediate stuff. That's what Cooper Kupp does.
Why couldn't
so they're complementary.
Robert Woods is more of the sweep guy. The
gadget guy.
That's Sean why they needed Gurley.
Sean McVay don't have tight ends?
Garrett, no. Everett.
That's what Goff looked like he needed. He looked like he was
He needed a safety valve.
He wanted somebody in across the middle that he could throw to.
But like, Everett can catch the ball. I think, I don't know if they have plays. I don't know if Garrett could go to the third and fourth reads that fast with the way they were getting pressure on him.
But obviously, I think this is going to be a big offseason for them. We talked about what all the teams needed last week, the ones that lost. I think the Rams, they're good at wideout if they can stay healthy. So you might want to get a little bit more depth there.
The wideouts they have worked for the offensive scheme that McVay have, but I don't.
I don't think they have depth.
No, they don't have depth.
That's the one that they don't have depth on most of their
because they're paying all of their top guys.
Exactly,
but their top guys on defense.
All overall, they pay Gurley.
They had to
Gurley got money now.
And they didn't use him.
They had to get CJ off the couch to back up Gurley.
Exactly.
If they had to rely on Gurley and CJ Anderson, they probably would have lost to the Cowboys.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, possibly, but.
But they need depth. I think they need wide receiver depth. I'm not saying that you need to go get the next greatest wide receiver, but in the 4th, 5th, 6th round, you can go get somebody.
I would say they need a tight end.
In the first 3 rounds, they got to go find themselves a tight end. I think also in the first 3 rounds, they got to go find themselves an Ndamukong Suh replacement.
This is a defensive draft, so yeah, you can find one.
You know what I'm saying? But he's not going to be the level of Ndamukong Suh, but you got to get.
You talking about someone who could just bring pressure.
Exactly. Somebody that can take advantage of the single teams that you get because Aaron Donald's getting double teamed.
Double teamed in that game.
He was double teamed in that
game. Yeah, go ahead. Not a lot. Keep poo pooing.
He was. If you go back and watch Aaron Donald, almost every play he was double teamed or chipped. Like they kept him out of the. That was the one thing that Bill Belichick wasn't going to lose by. This guy not going
to
be.
And another thing too, as much as I'm giving a lot of respect to Wade Phillips, I don't know if it was the players or just his play calling leaving somebody open in the middle. But Julian Edelman should never have had over 100 yards in that game.
But you know what, though? Some of that was play calling, but Marcus Peters got beat quick, too easy, too many times.
Aqib Talib did, too. I saw a couple plays where Edelman, I didn't know he was that great of a route runner, but he just hit his 1-2 move, and
they're not was on the cover side. Corners like that. And definitely Marcus Peters isn't.
He's not. But at the same time, it's the Super Bowl. Like
Talib so-so, but he's older.
He is.
And he just got.
None of them receivers is faster than Talib now.
Hey, amen.
And you can't jam them. You get 5 yards.
Sometimes they try to miss.
The one where Edelman was in motion and he just ran his route. Didn't get touched. Nobody in the area.
And Brady's making a lot of play. Like, he's changing the plays at the line of scrimmage, too. So whatever defense,
but if you see a man in motion, you got an eye on you.
But they don't have a guy on defense that they don't have a Ray Lewis. A Ray Lewis, if he saw Brady change, that's what. And Ray Lewis has said that. He said he'll see Brady change and he'll change the whole defense on the fly. That's why they always gave him problems.
They don't have a defensive quarterback. Aaron Donald is the best defensive player in the NFL overall, but he's not necessarily.
I don't want to hear that anymore.
That's cool, Ken. You could be over there by yourself. However, they don't have a defensive quarterback. And it's extremely difficult for a D tackle to be the defensive quarterback. It's typically a safety or a linebacker that can see what's happening. Yeah. Aaron Donald, he on the ground. He's just trying to get to the quarterback. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So they need that. And obviously, in that defense, the weak link was the linebackers.
Yeah.
So they didn't have a defensive quarterback. And it showed.
Mm-hmm. Going to Ken's statement. We talk about Aaron Donald a lot. We say he's the most dominant. The numbers stack up to it. However, in the games that we – primetime games we watch, is what he's doing at his position that effective throughout the whole game?
I don't think so.
I'm saying it that way just so I'm not taking anything away from him and his accomplishments because he's a dog. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like – How am I going to say this? It's kind of like having a good left tackle, right? Mm-hmm. That one side is always protected. But if your right tackle ain't good, does that, like, they're just going to come on that side. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that one side is strong, but as far as the whole game, it doesn't really affect the whole game because you have weaknesses elsewhere.
Yeah, and they definitely had weaknesses elsewhere on that defense, and we know.
And it's typically the linebacker, but that's why they got Dante Fowler. He made some plays.
They let Alex Ogletree go to the Giants.
Yeah. Here's the thing about Aaron Donald. Yeah, the stats look great. And when it came to him, I didn't see it. And I've struggled to see it with him. I know the stats tell a story, too. So I've always relied on football players that play the game, that know the game, Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
I just listen to them talk about Aaron Donald and the things that he's capable of. But there are certain players you can see it. You saw it with Urlacher. You saw it with Derrick Thomas. You saw it with Lawrence Taylor. You saw it with Simeon Brooks Brooks.
You mean linebackers.
Exactly. You're talking about people that run in space.
Warren
Sapp. So, hold on. So, you mean to tell me that you
Strahan. Michael Strahan.
But you're saying that you saw with Warren Sapp and you don't see it with Aaron Donald?
I do not see it with Aaron Donald.
Would you say he's better than Dwight Freeney or Robert Mathis?
But that's a little, that's apples and oranges.
But
that's
we saw them impact the game.
I'm talking about the D-line. I'm just talking about D-line. D-line who's made, Von Miller.
But D-N's sole job, D-N's sole job is to do what?
Protect. Okay, what about that Giants
hold on, because this is where I'm going to show y'all my NFL vision. In terms of defensive tackles, what's their jobs? They have multiple jobs. One of their main jobs is to keep O-linemen off the linebackers. That's one of their main jobs. Look at Ray Lewis had an interview where he said that defense didn't become great until they got Haloti Ngata.
But we saw it on the field with Ngata, though.
Okay. They don't have, first of all, the Rams, because you were asking about what does it do for the rest of that defense, right? They don't have linebackers to take advantage of that. They didn't have linebackers to take advantage of the fact that Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh is going to keep you clean. To go out here, run sideline to sideline, make plays.
So you say
they didn't have that.
It needs to be a collection of defensive players. That's what you're trying to say.
What I'm saying is that, especially in football, because it's such a team sport, your greatness sometimes can be somewhat diminished because you don't have those complementary pieces around you. We saw Ndamukong Suh dominate this year. Can we honestly
say, dominate in the playoffs, yes.
But can we say that this was, from beginning to end, Ndamukong Suh's best year?
Yeah, no. Yeah, no,
and what was the sole reason for that? He was playing next to Aaron Donald. Bruh, if you watch Ndamukong Suh in Miami and also in Detroit,
he got
double teamed 80 to 90% of the time.
But he still made plays in Miami.
And I'm not saying that they don't. So what it sounds like you're saying right now is that Aaron Donald don't make plays.
He gets stats.
What I'm saying is that.
But I don't see him make a lot of plays.
It's just more of like you hope for him to get a sack. But if he don't get a sack.
He got 16 and a half or 17 sacks this
season. He got 20.5 sacks this season.
20 sacks?
Yeah, but I'm
But he's running straight to the quarterback. He's not even trying to.
No, but Ken, did Warren Sapp ever get 20 sacks?
No, but Warren
Sapp. But you were talking about Warren Sapp is this, that, and the
Hey, third. But we saw Warren Sapp wreak havoc on the field. I don't see Aaron Donald wreaking havoc on the field the way Warren Sapp used to do it.
How do you get how you luck up into 20 sacks then?
I'm just saying this.
Sue?
I'm saying this. What he does may be great, but like you said, it may not be effective all around in the game. And then it makes you think about, okay, We just paid this man all this money.
I think it is effective. It's just that nobody, again, like defensive tackles have multiple jobs. But nobody can take advantage. Outside of Sue, nobody took advantage of what Aaron Donald brings to
Aaron
that
Donald
defense.
Made a couple of plays, but it's just his overall impact was not felt on that game at all.
When you talk about that Giants line that Brady faced, Tuck
But they had six guys. They had six D linemen.
But none of them.
They had a NASCAR package. I remember that.
None of them individually was as good as Aaron Donald.
So we're being told.
And some are debatable as far as Sue's level, right?
I give you that.
So the only one that we can really go like over the hills of is Justin Tuck, because he was the one who showed up.
Him and Strahan.
Strahan was only in one. Tuck was in both of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Tuck got two sacks in every Super Bowl that he was in.
I feel you. But
he's scared Brady.
Exactly.
But again, they had a NASCAR package. They put all six of their pass rushers in at the same time. It said, DBs, jam up. We're going to get to the quarterback. The Rams don't have that. The only pass rush that they truly have is Sue and.
I know. They're interior linemen. Fowler's a linebacker.
You know
so
how many first round picks they got on the D-line alone?
I don't know the other two guys on the
That's
edge.
What I'm saying.
Yeah, but if you got Aaron Donald, Ndamukong Suh, and Fowler, you should be getting to that quarterback.
Let me ask you this. Is
Brady only got sacked once.
Let me ask. Is Suh and Aaron Donald better than J.J. Watt and Jadeveon?
Yes.
Today they are. At J.J. Watt's height, I would say he's probably maybe a little bit better than Suh. More impactful. But the reason why I bring them up, both of those guys are edge guys. You can wreak more havoc on a quarterback on the edge, right? Because like you said, if you have a left tackle, right, and your right end, doesn't matter how good he is, if it's Jadeveon, you're gonna take that one-on-one matchup the majority of the time, right? And you're not gonna bat an eye. But if you have two guys, like Mathis, why was Mathis great? Because he had Dwight Freeney. Mm-hmm. And when Mathis was there by himself, still a great player, didn't have the same type of impact. So in football, you need great teammates to take advantage of the stellar guy that you have.
But by that logic, that means one or the other in that game
should have showed up.
That's also the greatness of Belichick. That's also part of the greatness of Belichick.
I really love this Super Bowl. It was a really great game. It was a really good game because it kept you on your toes. You didn't know what was going to happen. I will say, again, going back to the quarterbacks, both of them played like crap, but obviously one
play. We expected it. True, but one playing like the one of the two, it wouldn't surprise you to hear that he played like crap.
And then also,
being it was his first one.
Yeah. And Brady played like crap for three quarters, but when they needed Brady.
That one drive.
It was just one drive, yeah. And then
that's all it took.
And to be honest,
in a game like
does this look like, is Sean McVay and Jared Goff the younger, new generation of Brady and Belichick?
You know what? I asked myself that same question, and I thought this Super Bowl would have told me that if they would have won it. Because remember, Brady didn't light it up his first Super Bowl.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He only had one touchdown.
Yeah, Big Ben didn't light it up his first Super Bowl. Yeah, they were protected.
Two picks.
Yeah, they had running backs. They had a great defense. So, again, now we're looking at – so Goff didn't have to light it up.
Yeah, he just had to play better.
He just needed McVay
to
do his job.
That's all the game was.
McVay. McVay should have won the Super Bowl.
To answer your question, I need the first four games of next season. Because like
the
I said.
First four?
Yeah.
When do we judge the season off the first four games?
I'm judging the arc of McVay's coaching career off of the first four games next season. Because we know what he is. We know what he is. How is this going to affect him? How is he going to be able to get over the hump? Because we saw what happened to the Falcons.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And Philly.
We've seen great teams, great players, great coaches not be able to overcome a Super Bowl loss. So that's why I said I need to see the first four games of next season to see if he still has that spark.
The Falcons did lose a key person, guy on the coaching staff.
Yeah, of course.
That impacted it.
But remember,
wait, Zach Taylor. Who was Zach Taylor? What was his job?
He was
on the Rams.
I thought he was. He might have been an assistant offensive coordinator.
I don't really need him.
Quarterback
anyway.
Coach.
I don't think he's that good.
But at the end of the day, right? Like even coming into this season, I posed the question on this podcast. Who had more offensive talent than the Falcons? And for them to operate in the way that they did.
To be fair, they lost a lot of defensive pieces.
They did.
The offense didn't.
But you know what? But here's the thing. It's one thing that you lose a lot of defensive pieces, but that offense is still be putting up 30 plus a game.
Right.
And if you had a losing record and you defensively were giving up 28 points a game and you were scoring 30 points a game, I get it. But that offense needs to be held accountable.
And you know what? The Rams gave up a lot of points this year. And during stretches, like, they won a lot of games, but
– that defense was not dominant.
Yeah, it wasn't at all.
It was not a dominant defense.
There are going to be some question marks about them, you know, going into next year.
They actually dropped in defensive rankings the year from last year to this year.
Yep.
And they added all these big names.
Boy. And they only going to probably sign three. But
the big names they added.
I think they're going to keep Peters because he's still on his rookie deal.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll try to keep. I think they'll let Fowler go. I think they'll
try to keep him.
I think they'll try to keep Sue more than Fowler.
Yeah, I do too.
I would keep Sue, but
I would definitely try to keep Fowler.
Fowler was a headache. If you look at throughout the season, he had a lot of unnecessary penalties.
Yeah, but that was in Jacksonville, right?
No, I'm talking about even in the rant. Like there was a couple. I think that Dallas game. Didn't he make a couple plays?
But he needs to be coached. He wasn't coached well in Jacksonville. I don't think they got the potential of Fowler out of him.
They could keep him because he's still on his rookie deal.
Yeah,
too,
he played much better, and we saw his talent started to come out when he was on the Rams. And he had I think that was him that had that hit that was called a flag on Sony Michel when he cleaned him. So I think. With McVay and Wade Phillips, I think Wade Phillips can do some things with him.
Oh, yeah.
But I
think they only keep like two. They're going to try to re-sign Sue, Fowler, and Peters. But I think they're only going to be successful in like two of those.
Mm. I definitely think Sue stays because I think Sue kind of, he knows his career trajectory. And it was all over the damn place before he got here.
Yeah.
Right? And he, I don't think he's been more valuable anywhere else than here. So even though I think he will ask for a bag, I think that he'll give him somewhat of a discount. Not a big discount. I think he's about his money.
But also, because I keep forgetting, they are in Los Angeles.
Yeah, LA plays up. Yeah.
You'll take a pay cut to stay in sunny LA.
Yep.
If you could retire there, too.
All right, well, it's the last thing I'll say. I don't want to hear anything about McVay anymore. That's over.
It's not over.
I don't want to hear about golf anymore. And I don't want to hear about Aaron Donald anymore. It's over.
I will say this. This Super Bowl will say a lot about McVay if he never goes back. That's it. I'm not even going to put him on a short leash as far as saying like next year, the first four. I'm just going to say if he never gets back to another Super Bowl,
that will be the legacy
of Sean McVay.
I disagree because here's the thing, right? Like there's great coaches that only coach
the It depends on the reasons why, but I do agree with
that. Yeah, but I'm just saying that I'm talking about this.
If everything is just as it is.
If his play calling is the reason why he doesn't go back, that's what I mean. Like if he does – basically, he could be
– if he's continued to coach like he has the last few years, he hasn't lost his quarterback or any significant injuries that would impact him not going, then I agree with that.
I'm just saying, like, his ceiling is Belichick, and I think
– yes.
I think his floor well,
it was,
is,
not
is,
for me
is
anymore.
Andy Reid.
Nah. And well, I don't know.
Because Andy Reid's only been to one Super Bowl, right?
And that's the person that I was going to
– and he's never been
– but here's the thing, though. Andy Reid's perception and also his career is as one of the best coaches ever. And he's only played in one Super Bowl.
But he's also
known as a choker.
Which I think is unfair, but
It is. It's a bit unfair.
Yeah.
He has choked in situations, but it is a bit unfair.
He's criticized more than he actually deserves.
1,000%. And here's the thing. Like you said that the floor is Andy Reid. I'll take Andy Reid all day.
I'm saying he's still going. I think he's still on. Like, going to be a good coach, good to great coach.
He can coach.
I'm just saying. Like, people are like, as far as Andy Reid, y'all might say he's a great coach. I'll say he's good. He's good enough to turn your franchise around. Mm-hmm. But as far as getting over the hump,
here's the thing. Here's what will. I hate looking ahead because it only ages me. But here's what will. It does. He's 33, so. He has a 10, 15 year. What's that
more
than
to
me?
That.
So anyway,
he's 66.
Right,
he got like 30 years.
Exactly.
In
so I'm good. I'm patient. but here's what I say about McVay. Can he adjust with the times the way Belichick has? Belichick has a coaching foundation, but he has adjusted. Like this dude went back to a freaking fullback.
He Greg Pop.
Yeah.
The one thing about McVay that we don't talk about is like what is his culture? What is a signature thing about McVay as far as culture wise? Because with Belichick, we know he's strict, disciplined.
But I don't think McVay has had enough of a time for that to kind of uncover itself.
I don't know what the answer is, but I'll tell you this. Look at the cast of characters he's had on that defense. All problem child.
And he maintained all of that.
So you say he the white Marvin Lewis?
But they haven't gotten out of control. Marvin Lewis guys got out of control.
Even Pete Carroll's guys got out of control.
Yes. McVay's guys,
But again, that's what I'm saying. Like, we can't really pinpoint what his culture is.
Yes, we have a whole. We don't know exactly how to define it.
Yeah.
But compare Sue, Peters, Talib, who's a thug, who's fighting Crabtree. Who else he got on there? A bunch of damn
just on defense.
Goons.
And you need dogs on defense.
Hey, but a lot of people question whether or not he will be able to maintain a good locker room because of them. And we ain't heard a peep. So I think that speaks to the culture that he has. They just don't talk about it yet. So we'll hear what type of culture that he has as he continues his coaching career.
We just need it just needs more time. Because what was Bill Belichick's culture when he first got to New England?
Yeah.
We didn't know, right? Like he had Drew Bledsoe. He made the decision to, you know, once he got hurt to stick with Tom Brady. Like we didn't know what that culture was. It takes time to
There was no Patriot way back then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It takes time to establish something like that, especially when you're talking about a young genius type head coach, right? And then I don't want to say he was gifted, but he walked into Jared Goff. He walked into Todd Gurley. He walked into a lot of these guys that's going to be pillars for his career.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Yep. Like, think about it. McVay and Jared Goff are going to be joined at the hip. Like, they're going to have 15 to damn near 20 years together. You know what I'm saying? So Belichick wasn't gifted that. He got to go get Tom Brady. And then nobody know Tom Brady was going to be Tom Brady. Right. Or else he would have been the first damn pick. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those things. So I think we just got to give Sean McVay a little bit of time. I think what we have learned from Sean McVay is that he knows how to deal with egos.
He can manage personalities.
He can manage personalities. And I think as a head coach in the NFL, that is huge.
You know what he might be, actually? He might be the professional Urban Meyer.
It's possible.
I don't know, but
it's possible. Urban Meyer is not known for X's and O's. Even though he's known for X's and O's, he's known as person, like, he has great coaching staffs. Mm-hmm. And you see, he got Wade Phillips. He has a good, he knows, he coaches offense, so mm-hmm. he knows who to pick for offense. Like, he always talks about, like, I got to get the smartest people in the room because mm-hmm. this is my first gig as a head coach. Mm-hmm. And I'm the youngest ever, you know? So I want to surround myself with smart people.
Yeah. I tell you one thing, Gurley better than me because I'll be talking, I'll be mad as hell. I'll be talking so much shit right now.
Gurley, there's another, I feel like there's more to it, to this.
That's what I'm saying. I need to see
Gurley might actually be hurting. McVay might be like.
Yeah, they both probably trying to cover it up.
Yeah, they both trying to cover it up. And I think this, if he was healthy and McVay use him, I think you're going to see a whole different, and this is crazy to say, but you're going to see a whole different Todd Gurley next season. Because he's going to come out like, bruh. Ain't none of y'all stopping me.
Nobody was stopping him this year.
How can he top this year?
That's what I'm. All I'm saying from a mental standpoint.
I don't know. I don't know because if he was healthy and didn't get used, and they lost, and he know he could have impacted the field, I don't know how he'll deal with that.
Exactly. And then their division is going to get harder next year too, because Seattle's going to come back strong. I think Seattle's going to draft, you know, some more offensive weapons. They'll have another full year with their defense, you know, being, you know, rebuilding still. Mm-hmm. San Francisco, they're going to get their quarterback back.
Yeah, they're going
to
be healthy
again. They could get Antonio Brown. You know, Kyle Shanahan will have another year to get fully, you know, acclimated being a head coach.
So he don't have a week, conference.
Or like, a week division. Brady. He has to get through his division again, and then he has to deal with the conference. Because then you got Dallas coming back, you know, maybe a little bit stronger. The Giants, depend on what they do in the offseason.
Stop mentioning your team, bro.
Philly, you know, the Saints, Philly, you know.
No, the NFC is rough, bro. It's rough. There's no cakewalk like the AFC.
The NFC is like Brady. The West of the NBA.
Yeah, it's the West.
You got to bring your A game every Sunday. You might get tossed around here.
All right, man. That's it, man. You know, I mean, I was respectful. I didn't even, you know, jump on the Patriots, man. You know, I was respectful. You know, some people are just blessed and highly favored.
Brady's been to the Super Bowl more than any team in the NFL.
I mean, you know,
fuck Tom Brady, man. Right. God,
he just blessed the highly, man.
I guess this is me rubbing off on y'all. Y'all just disrespecting me.
Look. No disrespect to Tom Brady. The reason why, like, that night and why I just said fuck Tom Brady is because I am a little salty of how he wins. Because it's not like he dominated the entire game.
Like Montana did.
Yeah, it's not like he made incredible throws all night. He had one drive. And I get it. That's what
kickers.
That's what you pay him for. You know what I'm saying? You play clutch players to be clutch when it's a clutch moment.
Or other teams make mistakes.
Or other teammates' mistakes, and then you capital. I get all that, but damn, bruh, is how you win.
That's why I came to the conclusion that night. I was like, you know what? Some people's life is the way it is. Like, he's just destined to do this.
Yep.
There's no rhyme or reason.
It was written.
There's no way this should be happening. It was just like, this is what you're supposed to do, and that's it. Just like Jordan, you're supposed to go 6-0 and. This program won't even entertain those conversations because they're sacrilegious. I don't know why y'all doing this. I don't know why y'all entertain Brady versus Jordan. Y'all need to stop it. We are going to hold on to our black god of basketball. It's just ridiculous. The man is 6-0 in the final.
You don't
want
to have a debate because you won't like what I had to say. But if you don't want to have
So in basketball, Kyrie Irving staying with the Boston Celtics. AD staying with the Pels for right now. All-Star Weekend coming up.
You think the Celtics make any trades before the
deadline? Here's the thing.
I mean, do.
Who?
I don't know.
You know what's funny about these about the Pelican, like, trying to get AD?
Mm-hmm.
I think right now, and even in the offseason, the Lakers, what they're trying to, what they're willing to give, is going to be better than anybody else's package.
It's not better than Boston.
The Lakers package?
I think Boston's package is overrated.
I'll put it to you like this. For one reason, Boston's package isn't overrated. 3 first-round picks this year. This year. Ja Morant, Zion,
where do they
Cam
all
Reddy.
Fall, though?
But those picks are, like, below 10. They're 10 below.
Not all of them.
Most – the ones that matter because the they have, like, the 76ers pick or something like that, and it's, like – number one protected or something like that, and then they have.
But
like,
obviously, Philly's going to the playoffs.
They got the Memphis pick, which is like it's protected. It only matters if it's between 9 and 20 or 9 and 30.
Yeah, I think I'm with.
So if it's higher than that, they Boston
Memphis,
keeps it.
No, Memphis gets it.
So
it has to be low. It has to be
in between 9 and 20.
Yeah.
Okay, between 9 and 20, you can get an amazing player in this
I'm
draft.
I'm just saying.
But all I'm saying, look, from the Pelicans, you're looking to rebuild. And if I can get 3 first round, even if I get number 5, 9, and 22, including their draft pick, I'm taking that.
But listen, I'm also those are just the picks. But look at the players. Who are they giving up?
Okay.
Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. And let's go for player for player. Is Jason Tatum better than Kyle Kuzma right now?
I think he has more upside.
Yes.
I say no. Kyle Kuzma's better.
Today, right now, if you're going off the numbers, then yes. But if we are, and you got to remember, we're talking about young players. Young players, you can't solely evaluate them about what they're doing right now. It's projecting what they will be and what they can do.
I see Kyle Kuzma as a consistent scorer. I have yet to see Jason Tatum be known as that.
I think Jason Tatum has a higher seat. I think out of everybody that we consider in this trade package from LA and Boston, Jason Tatum has the most upside out of anybody.
Real quick, this mock draft, the Celtics are projected to have 13, 19, and 24.
Okay.
That's
but those are picks that don't mean
24 of Jontay Porter, mock draft, 19, Charles Bassey. He's
yes.
I think he's pretty good.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And 13, some guy named KZ Akpala.
He's nice too.
But
I can't say his name. But
they may go with Siku Dumbuya. Well, he's out of France, so, but.
And here's the thing. Obviously, it depends
there's
on.
Some talent. There's some talent
no, but I'm
in
just,
this
I'm
draft.
Just saying, like, right now, like, the picks, okay, it'll be bottom. You're picking outside the top 10, which, depending on how you draft, you could hit on some. But the players is the one thing that, those are the ones that you can guarantee, like, they're going to be playing this season. We're going to see how they develop.
I only think that.
If we go player for player, so, the Lakers have better players
so
than the
Celtics. So, would you rather have Brandon Ingram than Jaylen Brown? Because using your thought process, Jaylen Brown is way more consistent than Brandon Ingram right now.
Yeah, but I'd rather have Brandon Ingram than Jaylen Brown. Because the one thing that Jaylen Brown has over Brandon Ingram right now is the fact that he plays better defense. And he's
over Jaylen Brown?
No, I mean, Jaylen Brown has over Brandon Ingram.
And you know what?
Yeah, Brandon Ingram's more of an offensive player.
But you could teach defense.
Yeah, but defense is all about will. Jaylen Brown is a legit two-way player that can guard 1 through 3.
But if Brandon Ingram could play, like, he's long, like, if he plays defense, he's going to shut down
It's a will thing, though.
No,
and he hasn't wanted to play lockdown defense.
No, he's trying to figure
it out. I think that's what it is. And once he figure it out, I think Brandon Ingram will be unleashed.
And then we have Lonzo Ball against Terry Rozier. That's a wash.
Yeah,
right?
It is what it is. But here's the thing with Brandon Ingram, and y'all know my 3 to 5.
I know, and think about that when I evaluate him.
He was overdrafted in my opinion, but he's still a good player.
No, he's definitely a good player. And I've seen those moments where I'm like, oh, this could be scary. But this is supposed to be the year where it's starting to be more consistent.
Let me add something that I heard. It's not fully Brandon Ingram's fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's the coaching staff. And if you remember what was one of the criticisms that Magic Johnson had of Luke Walton, it's those damn coaches, his assistant coaches, and that the offense and the way they're coaching Brandon Ingram, Ball, and Kuzma is not conducive to how they play and that they are underperforming because of it.
Well, here's the thing. I think that it's multifaceted. And I think that part of that is true.
And a better offensive system. And they don't fit what they're doing.
Part of that is true. I 100% agree because, especially with Lonzo, how is he your point guard of the future? He don't close out games for you. Those are critical moments mm-hmm. that he has to be out on the court to gain that type mm-hmm. of experience. Because if you're trying to win a championship and this is going to be your point guard of the future, he needs to know what that pressure feels like, mm-hmm. right? Even if it's a lowly game against the Phoenix Suns or you're playing against the Golden State Warriors and you're down two, he needs to be out on that court. I also agree that they don't always put him in the best positions possible. But at the end of the day, we've all played ball here. And you got to go do what you do you best.
But he's still young. How is he going to buck the coaches like that?
No. But there's moments, right? Like I guess my thing with sports is moments. And Brandon Ingram has had moments or opportunities to kind of to kind of validate his draft value.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like if you're the number two pick, even if you're not all the way ready. In big moments, like KD when he came into the league, right? Like KD only averaged 20
points.
That's
unfair.
How is that unfair?
You're just saying because of the number two pick status, right?
Number two pick status.
Yeah, like, but you saw KD in college.
But he's comparing pick status.
Number two pick status. Also, in moments, big moments, we saw KD elevate, even as a young guy. But KD was inconsistent. We know that. We know that every young player is inconsistent.
KD's talent leaped off the screen. Here's
the thing. We're talking Brandon Ingram year three already.
Okay, when did Anthony
Davis... And KD year one. You should at least be mirroring what KD came into the league doing right now.
My thing is this.
Brandon Ingram was the type of player that Kevin Durant was in college.
I understand that, but year three, Brandon Ingram should resemble year one KD.
This is another reason why, outside of LeBron being there, this is another reason why I think Luke Walton is going to get fired.
Oh, he's
because
done. He hasn't fired his assistant coaches.
He ain't that good of a coach. Point blank, period. He got all of his glory, all of his praise. Because for one, he was a former Laker and he won championships with that when he was playing.
I think he can
and
coach,
two,
man.
And two, he coached the Golden State Warriors when Kerr was out for 30-something games and they had a winning record. But me and you can be a coaching staff for the Golden damn State Warriors.
I've come around.
They got Iguodala drawing up plays.
Used to be you about Luke Walton.
Luke Walton is trash.
About Luke Walton.
I don't think he's trash.
He's trash.
But I've come around on Luke Walton.
Has he had a 500 record? Has he gone on a winning streak?
But he's taken a young team and coaches.
Brad Stevens.
But he struggled the first 3 years.
This is Luke Walton, what, third season?
Third. Because he improved the wins last year.
Because Golden State won two titles.
And then this year he got Luke Walton. I mean, he got LeBron. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't really that great in his first year. They got better as the season went on. The second year, they improved the wins from the year before. And then this year, they got LeBron. But they're doing it with all young people. We're talking about second-round young players that haven't even played five.
But those are draft. Look at the draft capital
but
they have.
Brad Stevens is a great example. Brad mm-hmm. Stevens wasn't all that great.
He struggled.
No, but he showed that he can develop young talent.
What young talent from year one Brad Stevens is still there? Danny Ainge turned that thing all the way around. What was that basketball player's name? He played for Kentucky. His last name was Young. He was like a 2-3.
Not Royce
lefty.
Young.
Lefty. He's a lefty.
James Young.
But that lefty, he was a lottery pick. Didn't last 2 years on that squad.
I would say Marcus Smart has developed well in Brad Stevens'
system. No, he hasn't.
He has. Jaylen Brown.
He's
not consistent this year.
That's more of him mentally than him. Because when Kyrie's out and he plays, he has a good game. That to me, that's more mentally. Like I want, he feels like
that's not Brad Stevens.
I know that's not Brad Stevens, but I'm saying.
But that is primarily on Terry Rozier, but that's also on Brad Stevens. When has Popovich ever had a situation like that? It don't matter if you start or you come off the bench or you've been third damn string and I need you to start. You gonna play the way I need you to play.
Yeah, he got guys like Brian.
Yeah, but he has championship pedigree though. It's easy to buy in if a coach been winning championships since before you got in there. Brad Stevens hasn't won nothing yet. But he showed that he can. He's still a good coach that he can develop talent. That's the only reason.
But
I'm
even
him
if, but even if Boston would already have won a championship, that's still on Terry Rozier and partly Brad Stevens.
Flip the rosters. Give Luke Walton the Celtics roster. What do you think he's doing with that?
I think he barely 500.
With Kyrie.
No,
Jason Tatum and Jalen Brown
before Kyrie.
This roster, if we give Luke teams.
How will Luke Walton perform when he has experience, when he has talent and their experience?
Six seed.
I was going to say no less than a six seed.
Six seed.
No less? You know, but that's kind of sort of what Brad Stevens is right now.
Yeah.
No, Brad Stevens, they since that
but I think, fourth. But you can't
they're
say.
Third. They're
no,
third
they're
now.
Not third.
They when they beat OKC, they went into the third seed, I think.
You got to double check that. I don't check that.
I don't know. But either way, though, what you're saying, you can't say that he can't coach and then say if you give him another roster, he'll be have the same record as a guy who's everybody saying can coach.
That's because the talent level is different.
Oh, so now Brad Stevens can't coach. So now it's the talent.
Brad Stevens has a third. He's number three in the East, right? Well, from what I heard last night, he's number three in the East.
Fact check this.
And they're progressing as they go.
But they've also underperformed all year too.
Kyrie's playing his best basketball since probably ever of his career right now. This stretch.
That's because of Kyrie.
Exactly.
Not Brad Stevens.
But if you take Kyrie off of the Brad Stevens, I still think Brad Stevens.
We took Kyrie off the. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
He's still a good coach. He's shown that he can take a good team far in the playoffs.
Yes.
Luke Walton. With young talent, or even with LeBron,
they were way better. Like with LeBron, their third season.
Yeah, but they weren't. No one's ever talked about them competing with the Warriors with LeBron.
Some were, but you know, we also
give Brad Stevens LeBron, take Kyrie out. Let's switch star players. What happens?
But part of the reason why they were not having those conversations is because of the young talent on the Lakers. You know, because Brandon Ingram.
If you can't develop young talent, then what is that, Byron Scott?
I mean, you know, that's true. But I don't know if it's all Luke Walton. I do think that Magic didn't tell him that for no reason. Magic told him that for a reason. And now there's data and analytics to back it up, and there are people that are saying these things, that it's his coaching staff are not getting all of the talent out of Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball.
Or what if Brandon Ingram just is what Brandon Ingram is, and what he's going to be is an underachieving second overall pick that only averages 15 to 18 points a game?
Because
what if he is Andrew Wiggins?
It's funny you said that, because I did call him that at one point this season, just thinking about Brandon Ingram as a player. And I was like, oh, he may just be Andrew Wiggins. But then I'll see him play, and I'm like, okay, there's still just some things that he just – there's certain nuances of the game. LeBron is still coaching him up. Like, I still, for some odd reason, believe the talent is there. He just hasn't figured it out yet.
I'm going to put it to you like this. Let me ask you this. Do you think Brian – being there kind of slowing down the progression of Brandon Ingram? Like if Brian
no,
wasn't there?
No. And the reason why I say that is because obviously LeBron, he handles the rock and he makes a lot of the plays. But Brandon Ingram coming into the league was supposed to be a scorer, right? And when I see him, right, trying to score in this, the main thing that I take away from his game that he does not have.
Moves.
No, it's not even that. It's consistency with his jumper. Like, his mid-range jumper is not consistent. There's no facet of his shooting ability that's consistent right now.
Yes, his jumper is not consistent at all. But sometimes when I watch him, I'm like, dude, like, you're getting yourself in situations you can't get out of. Like, you don't know how you're going to attack your defender.
Yeah, and that's a problem.
He doesn't know what move he's going to make. He's just dribbling the ball.
Exactly. And that's a problem. That's not a LeBron thing. That's not a coaching thing.
Because he's always been that.
That's a Brandon Ingram thing. And I've seen that since year one. Yep, and that's why I thought by now he would have figured some of that stuff out.
Is that because LeBron came there?
No.
He's been doing that since.
Does LeBron factor in this teaching moment at all?
Well, I think anytime you put LeBron in on a team, regardless if you have young players or old players, it's a positive thing. The man has done it all. The man has played with pressure from the moment he stepped onto a basketball court, but, and he's overcome.
And they've spoken to him, actually. Like, he's actually on the sideline coach. Like, when he was hurt, he was actually telling them, like, certain moves and how to do this. Exactly. Like, he was coaching
them
up. Just
like any great player. Yeah. Every great player does that. So, for me, when I watch Brandon Ingram play, it's I don't think he still understands what he is.
I agree with that, yes.
And that's a problem as a number two pick, because you should understand what makes me great. I may not be able to do it consistently great, but I know what makes me great, and you can't stop it. And he, what is it? Length? But what do you do with that length? We see what Giannis is doing with that length.
Yeah, but look how long it, well, what?
It took Giannis a little while, but Giannis was more raw than Brandon Ingram.
But Brandon Ingram looks raw.
But he wasn't Giannis raw. Giannis didn't start playing basketball till
like
16.
What number was Giannis? What was he, ninth, eighth, seventh?
Nah, he was like later in the lottery. Yeah,
okay, so was. I guess that's not.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Giannis was that diamond in the rough. And it was like, he could be.
He was a Kawhi.
But he might not.
Yeah.
And he is. And that's what happened.
Okay, let's. We got to talk about the Bucks.
He was, he was the 15th overall.
15. He right outside the lottery.
He was 15?
Yeah. He was.
But he had nothing. Yeah, he had nothing.
No, but I mean, but that's still a steal, though.
Of course. Looking back.
Yeah.
Looking back. But
2013.
Who else was in that draft? Who got drafted ahead of him?
Give me a second.
Boston is number three. They're tied with the Pacers.
They are. They are.
Okay, you say who else in that draft?
Yeah, who else was in that
draft? Okay, so the first. So the first draft, Anthony Bennett.
Cleveland.
Anthony Bennett.
If Cleveland gets the number one pick this year, I'm gonna be pissed.
The second pick was Victor Oladipo.
That wasn't a bad.
Third pick was Alex Land, Phoenix Suns. Fourth pick, sixth was Nolan Newell, traded to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. The eighth pick was KCP, Quantavious Caldwell Pope by the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah, it was a week.
Trey Burke in Minnesota. CJ McCollum. Was selected 10th.
It took Carter, him a minute, too.
Michael Carter-Williams. Steven Adams for OKC.
Took him
Kelly
a minute.
Olenek. Yep, he was drafted. Dan Giannis.
So it was relatively
weak. Yeah, it was a weak draft, but they were all role players.
Yeah, but there was only two players in that I would have taken possibly ahead of Giannis.
Rudy was selected 27th. Wow, Rudy Gobert. Yeah, 27th.
Wow, but he was real thin. Ain't nobody think that he was gonna fill out.
Yeah. Shabazz Muhammad, hell no, nah,
overrated.
Dennis Schroeder was selected right after Giannis.
That was a good pick for him.
Yeah,
that's a good pick.
Tim Hardaway Jr., Reggie Bullock.
Yeah. So that was kind of a weak. Only CJ McCollum, and obviously Victor now, and then there was one other one that was in there that I, you know.
So what happens with LA? Does a trade happen?
Look, first of all, when I started to see some of the offers that they were throwing out.
All those draft picks?
Basically a starting five and
it's
draft
more than
picks.
That. It's a franchise.
It was like, at that point, I'm like, AD's not worth it. He's just not worth
he's not
all
worth
of
all that.
That.
All of that, yeah, no.
But
no.
Kuzma.
What else are you going to do? Because now the names is out
there.
Wait
2 years.
Now the names is out there, though.
Okay, wait.
I mean, but as
you got no choice.
But as an NBA player, you got to understand it's kind of a business.
It is.
Yeah, but at the same time,
you can't be like that salty. It'd be different if they'd be like, "We're gonna roll with you forever," and da 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 da, and give you all that. But
you already whoa.
You know it's a business.
We know
Lonzo's speech. I mean, the Magic Johnson gave to Lonzo. We're gonna have his name in the rafters.
And
now this nigga on the
exactly that. But the rest of them is like, okay, I can understand ball. I can understand
but Magic messed up with that.
But B, on the back end of stuff, we know that these GMs and coaching staffs be like, no, you're good. What happened with DeMar DeRozan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like that type of story happens.
And
too
you best
often.
Believe Kyrie's been floated out there too.
Oh yeah.
Of course.
So
but then
that's why
nobody wants to take a flyer on him because he's gonna be a free agent July 1st.
Exactly. Exactly. So at the end of the day, it is a business, but don't lie to my face and trick me in the background. You know what I'm saying? Like that's the problem.
And at least it's being open. The discussions are being open. The players know that.
Yeah.
My thing is just that how do you come back from that? Like if no trade happens, and like
getting blown out by Indiana. That's how you.
Because they understand it's a business. Because like you said, it's been very very public, and they know good and damn well that it's AD. Mm-hmm. They would trade themselves for Anthony Davis.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's one thing to be a superstar player and get talked about like being traded for a lesser player. Oh yeah, I'm fucking feel some type of way. I'm getting paid damn near $30 million a year. You talking about 2-3 guys that get paid 11? The hell you doing? But if you're talking about like the opposite way, right? Like these youngins, what have you done? You still got Similac on your breath. Like, who is you? Right. Who is you, Kyle Kuzma? Oh, you think you nice because you had a couple 30-point games this year? You're not nice. You're aight. You see? Like, Lonzo, like, bro, you're getting better. You know, all these guys, you're not established. It doesn't matter if you are in trade talks. You know what? That should fuel you better to make sure that if it doesn't happen next go-round, oh, no, he's untouchable. That should be your mindset as a young player.
My thing is this, and I think Kuzma had the best quote out of this. He's like, it don't matter where I'm playing, I'm a ball regardless. And that's why I love Kuzma. I've been on Kuzma early on when y'all was saying Brandon Ingram was better than him.
You were. But my thing is this, as a professional athlete, you are played to play a game. It does not matter what city you represent. It does not matter. It matters that you play basketball to your top potential. And that's it. Yeah. And if you do that, the rest of it takes care of it. LeBron had that quote. He said, take care of business. And what that means is I take care of basketball. Everything else take care of itself.
But my reason with that is bringing up the whole trade thing is the fact that I think this is the best deal. They Pelicans have to take this deal because in the offseason, it's too many variables that could go wrong for them to end up
which
with.
Which deal should they take? Which one?
The Lakers. That's the best.
Saying, which Lakers? Because they offered like.
They came back.
It's been the same players.
Yeah, but they came back and asked for more picks.
Yeah, they asked for more
picks. Well, that's the thing. I'm talking about just the two picks. The two picks.
So two picks. Lonzo Ingram and Ball.
All them.
If you want to supplement the picks for players,
just the three of them. I thought it was Ingram, Ball,
Solomon
and Kuzma.
Hill,
and
then Cap
the first round draft.
Yeah, the Solomon Hill thing is big because the Pelicans, if you're going to really rebuild, take everybody off the books.
So who else are the Lakers trading to make the money, right? Because Anthony Davis is one of the highest paid basketball players in the NBA. So you have to give up a big contract and then return that big contract.
They added Rondo.
Was Stevenson or was
it? I thought it was the three kids.
Rondo was in one of them too.
Zubac.
Yeah, Rondo was in one of them.
Two draft picks.
And Solomon Hill's contract.
And then Solomon Hill was in it somewhere.
I think that probably will even it out.
It's not, because from the Lakers' perspective, you're trading three rookie deals.
Yeah.
You're trading three rookie deals and you're taking back a supermax. Well, a max extension, and you're also taking back another big contract. The monies don't
okay,
even
so
out.
Here, oh. So Lakers update trade from Anthony. This is the one I sent y'all. Included Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, two first-round draft picks, willingness to observe the remaining $12.7 million on Solomon Hill's contract for 2019-2020 season.
I don't know.
But then Pelicans wanted two that. More additional draft picks
so
on top of that.
Four?
So yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's too much.
They may have
so you
found
saying they
money.
Take that deal? For
well, no, not that deal. I'm talking about the one outside of them extra picks. Yeah.
They were just trying to see if they had a fool.
They were just trying to go for the moon and the stars.
That's all it is, and that's why I'm glad.
But do you think they should take the Ingram, Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, and two first-round draft picks?
Yes.
They should take that.
So,
and a Solomon Hill player.
So if you're Magic Johnson... Does this make the trade over the hill? Like, instead of four draft picks, you give them three?
I'm not doing three.
Why not?
So you think
what
two,
are these draft picks going to mean anyway?
Exactly.
What are these draft picks?
Because they got to fill out the... I mean, I know they can go get veterans, but...
Do you understand? Obviously, when you draft 30th and stuff like that, or 25 or less, a veteran contract is still going to cost you more than that rookie deal. But those rookie deals aren't guaranteed either, right? So... It's one of those things. But to me, when you have an AD LeBron situation going on, I'd rather have the veteran than the number 25 draft.
No. I agree with that. It just seemed like another
it seems too much.
Pick. It is way too much. But I'm not even comfortable giving them two. Zubac.
But here's the thing.
Or
I'm
Kuzma.
I'm okay Zubac. With three picks. And the reason why I'm okay with
Well, give me
picks,
Zubac back. You can have another pick. Give me Zubac
why
back.
I want them both. Zubac like that.
I want them both.
Zubac ain't – none of them players, like he was saying, they young.
They're not gonna be
they
there.
Don't mean nothing.
Yeah, they don't mean nothing, bro. But Ken, Zubac is not a franchise changer.
No, I understand you that. You know I just don't want to give another guy. I'm giving you four guys.
No, I understand that.
And this one is three, though.
Okay, Zubac's not part of that?
But when I sent y'all.
But either way, I give him Zubac and that third pick because you know why? Who's about to get bought out?
Oh, DeAndre Jordan.
You know what I'm saying?
And Wes Matthews.
So you can get a starting center better than Zubac
For the betterment.
Yeah. Exactly.
And they still got Wagner.
And maybe not for the minimum.
And they got Tyson Chandler, too.
Yeah.
And they still got Tyson.
And McGee.
So what I'm saying is, So what I'm saying is that you can still get value there.
Yeah, you can take Zubac.
Exactly.
Just give me Kuzma.
And you can get that third pick, too.
You're not getting my third pick.
You can get a third pick. You know why? No. You can get that third pick.
You're mortgaging the farm.
No. But here's the thing. Because you got the cow already, and you about to get another one. So the rest of the farm don't matter, bruh.
What's the other one? They got enough room for another star?
LeBron and AD.
You got cap space for one more.
Damn.
That's the thing. That's why I'm saying you got
to give them that third. So you give them that third pick.
Rob was saying that third pick is going to be a low pick anyway because they're going to be better.
No, I know they're going to be a low pick.
Going after this, after Thursday, you don't know what the hell is going on. They could trade this man to wherever.
It's not in LA's hands anymore. So,
exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, control what happened to Paul George, what's going on right now with Kawhi Leonard. Like, you don't want to put that game.
No. But what I'm saying is that L.A. is giving them. Now it's up to them. If they don't accept it, L.A. can't be at fault because they've given them every single thing that they can. They have. So at this point, it's the Pelicans going to be like, nah.
Of course.
That's why I'm saying the Pelicans have to.
So that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, if going back to what you're saying is in terms of the Pelicans accepting it or not.
Because they're
going to
get scraps. If they don't take this deal, I feel like this offer is that.
In the summer, Boston.
Jason Tatum.
Boston has a better. How does Boston not have
Kyrie,
a better choice?
What if Kyrie said, I'm going to New York with KD? Everybody and their mama saying KD going to New York. Kyrie can go there.
And we know Kyrie is on the table.
Not only can he get his money, he can go play with KD. That's the best. That's already a better situation.
Okay, but
so you
get rid of Tatum, the draft picks. You get AD back, and you still got everybody else.
Wait. Let's talk about timing, right? Because what happens first? The NBA draft.
Happens
first. What is that? June? It's always like late June. Like after the
NBA draft happens before free agency.
Exactly. And if I'm the Celtics, right, and I don't know what picks they're going to get, but they can get three young players right now that they can trade you. You know what I'm saying? Because I could get on the phone with you on draft night. Hey, New Orleans, who you like? Oh, yeah, I got you. Oh, who you like for that second pick I got? Oh, yeah, you like him? Bet, I got you.
So you got
that third pick, who you like? So I can get you every single person that you want with my draft picks. I can give you an additional two guys to three guys right now that are NBA ready. So I'm going to give you six guys.
I'm going to give you Tatum.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to give you Tatum, Jalen, Terry if you want, plus the three guys you told me you like. How is that not better than the Lakers?
Because it's not. That's a short-term view of the situation. What the Celtics are playing for, they want AD long-term. And what is AD saying right now? I'm only signing long-term to L.A. So you're going to rent. You're going to give all that up and to rent AD for, if you're going into the this offseason, 1 year?
Let me ask you. Look. In the East.
And then he leaves?
In the East, right? And this is a big if, right? Because I don't know if they're going to keep Kyrie. If Boston keeps Kyrie, big if. If they keep Kyrie and you have Kyrie and AD, is that not the best duo in the East?
No, I agree that is, but that's a big if. Like
he's looking at it that AD
because
won't stay.
Because the main reason why AD would even think about going to Boston
is because of Kyrie.
Let me ask you this.
Also, his daddy already said, nigga, you ain't going over there.
But
if Kyrie there, he's like, that's pops. That's better than going over there.
But let me ask you this.
You said they ain't loyal.
What if you get a title out of it?
That's if Kyrie's there.
Same scenario.
Because we already drinking at this point.
But
Kyrie there, AD's there. They win a championship.
Kyrie's there. So long term, because obviously if Kyrie resigns, it's not no 1 year.
Right.
He's gonna sign three.
So Kyrie's the franchise. AD stays. They win a chip. AD bounce and go to LA. Is it worth it then?
Yes.
Obviously, because you get a
right.
But I'm just saying, Kyrie gone. He said, ask me this on July 1st. By the time
I already know Kyrie
already got
out
Nick
there.
Uniform on.
I just want to know, I called this last summer when me and FIFA was talking about the free agency in 2018. I said, do not be surprised next year because New York is going to make a splash in the offseason. And if they get Kyrie and KD, you might as well call
they
me BZ
already said
Yo, you might as well call me BZ Dom.
KD, man. They already said the people on when the Knicks made that trade,
all right, so let's go there.
It was all because
Porzingis.
It was all because KD So, or somebody from his management said, hey, if you make the cap room, he coming.
Wow. That's what
when they heard that,
that's the rumor that's out there.
That's the rumor.
And then you tell me something about like some like a business partner or something.
Yeah, KD's one of his main business partners, they do a lot of business. They're stationed in Manhattan.
So Porzingis. So what we're hearing now, cuz it's all coming out, and Porzingis, you know, he think he black, so yeah, he talking about.
Porzingis talking a lot of shit.
He talking about stay woke and all that other shit.
He sure is. Yeah. Hey,
what happened with that situation was, ever since the Phil Jackson era, Porzingis has been unhappy, and then obviously with his injury, he's had a lot of time to sit and think and talk. His brother's his agent. He's been talking to him. He doesn't like any of the moves that they've really been doing. This whole tanking thing doesn't sit well with him. Ever since he got drafted, they've been having a bad record since he got drafted.
Are they tanking, or are they just not good? I mean, I know they're tanking, but they don't
both.
Yeah,
a little bit of both.
Yeah, so.
And I think that I understand where Porzingis, like, initially when he was drafted, I understand his disdain with the franchise, mainly because Phil Jackson over here talking about triangle offense, bro. That was 2017, bro. And you talking to triangle. Unless you come down here to coach that, it's not going to work. You can't, as a GM or front office person, say, we're going to hire this head coach, but you got to run this system.
Okay, that's fine. But they also have room with Porzingis on the books to sign how many players next year?
Well, the thing is, if he would have signed a like, obviously, he's a restricted free agent after this season. Mm-hmm. So whoever had his draft rights, they can match any offer that someone offers for him.
Exactly. And the reason why the Knicks waited was because they would have saved $10 million in cap room by not signing the not offering the extension as soon as he was available to be offered the extension.
And they told him that before the season was over last. Like, listen, this is what we're going to do. We're trying to go for KD. If we sign you to the full max or whatever now, that's going to take money away from us doing that.
So Porzingis want to win. He's not cool with the tanking, but he's not on the court to impact winning.
But that was also New York.
The next year, you have a chance to get KD and get back to winning.
But
why would you want out?
He's been disgruntled because he also didn't like how they treated Carmelo at the end of that, too. Him and Carmelo, as much as people want to poo-poo about his relationship with his teammates, they had a good relationship to where that still stuck with him. So he brought all those grievances up to the Knicks front.
Even though the guy that did all of that was no longer there, he was still mad.
And also from the Knicks standpoint, they didn't like the fact that he skipped the exit interview either. Like, who the hell are you as a rookie to skip an exit? We understand Melo doing it. He a vet. He's proven. Nigga, you just got here. And we was booing you when you got drafted. Mm-hmm. So you still got a lot to prove to us. So that's what happened. So as soon as he said, look, I don't really like how things is going, I'm not going to re-sign.
He walked in the office and said he
wasn't going to re-sign. He wasn't, or
I don't blame
gonna,
the Knicks.
Or he was going to keep his option open. Yeah. As soon as they heard that, they was like, all right, bet.
Yeah.
45 minutes later, you traded.
You're not going to walk in here telling me what I'm going to do.
Exactly.
I'm the GM, and I own it, man. Get your ass out of here.
And then, of course, he heard his name and trade rumors and stuff for AD. Like, bro,
and that's why it was a good trade for both squads, right? And again, I always say, what are you trying to do? You trying to buy your championship or draft your championship? And we already see the route that New York is going.
Knicks clearly can't draft a championship.
They can't draft, and they've been trying to buy one for the last 20 years.
Exactly. But this is their best opportunity to buy this championship. And then you look at it from Dallas' perspective, bruh, you look.
If he's healthy?
Yes.
KD, if he's healthy, Kyrie, man, in New York?
That's nice, but let's talk about Dallas.
Yeah, Dallas. Okay.
Because Luka, I knew Luka was good. Right. I knew Luka had, I think what made Luka special to me coming in this early was the fact that he played all that professional ball and just his IQ.
And it shows.
And it shows. Yeah. It 100% shows. Yes. But I knew his IQ was just going to be off the charts. But I didn't know that he was going to be as clutch as he is. I didn't know that he can pretty much lift the team
and
already
that white boy
at 19.
Athleticism, boy.
I mean, it's like the he perfect, like, when Dirk, you know, your previous franchise guy for the last 20 years is about to retire.
Mm-hmm.
You got Higo, your guy. You about to give him the keys.
Yep.
He is about
And now you got two guys that you about to give the keys to.
One of them. Because let's not forget a healthy KP.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's like, come on now. 10, come on.
Whatever
like,
else is extra.
Let's not forget
three
about
blocks.
It.
Yeah. Blocks, yeah. I put it to you like this, man. This boy Dirk Nowitzki got a front office job, and his job is going to be make sure Luka and KP teach them everything you got.
Yep. Rip Pitino on the situation. Take to the strip club. You got two. Give them whatever they want to.
Yeah.
But and obviously with Dallas, if everything works out right, They got 10, 15 years of
exactly dominance. And let's not forget about the other pieces of that trade, because the other pieces of that trade make it even better, right? Because the problem with Luka and Dennis Smith was the fact that Dennis Smith can score the ball, mm-hmm. but he's a true point guard, and true point guards need the rock. Luka is a pseudo point guard a la LeBron James, right? He's big like a small forward, but he controlled a rock. He's the primary playmaker. Dennis Smith and him, can they play together? Of course, great players can always play together, but it wasn't what you really wanted.
And Dennis Smith wasn't the franchise. He didn't come across as a franchise guy.
Not for them.
He was a piece, yeah.
And if Dennis Smith was a scoring point guard, because he's not. Dennis Smith is a pure point guard that can score. But if he was a scoring point guard, him and Luka would have been perfect together. But because
give me a
he's
comp
not,
for Dennis Smith.
Baron Davis.
I was gonna say
Baron Davis, because Baron Davis was a true PG that can score. In terms of the other pieces for Dallas, right? You got Luka at the point, right? Just kind of like Ben Simmons. You're probably not gonna play defense on the point, but he's their point offensively. Now you got Tim Hardaway. Mm-hmm. That's a two that can guard ones and twos, right? Now you got Courtney Lee coming off that bench.
A veteran.
I like what they did, because now filling in those roster spots, way easier. And then it's an easier sell to free agents. Yeah. Because think about it. KP is going to sign a Supermax or whatever.
Well, he's going to sign the restricted. He's going to sign the...
Yeah, he's
the,
all in.
The tender.
He said they're on the
he's
same page
sign
and everything.
The Supermax.
Okay, bet.
Sign the
bet. So what does that mean? That they can go get a Supermax player this offseason in addition to somebody... Well, no, because Tim Hardaway... I forgot how much Tim Hardaway makes.
Yeah.
He makes ridiculous money. So they'll be able to sign another max player this year. So you talking about KP, Luka, another max player, and a very solid Tim Hardaway?
But there's no max player out there they could get that would fit, right? Once KD and Kyrie off the books, who am I missing?
You got like Chris. Well, Max.
Kemba Walker. No, they don't want to need him.
It's KP. It's KD.
You can
Kyrie,
get Kawhi
and Kawhi. I don't know if Kawhi
and Kawhi's not going to go to Dallas.
Yeah. But you can make a compelling.
But I understand what you're saying. They got
room
to
make a compelling pitch. The thing about the Dallas trade though is another reason why the Knicks let him go, KP, the health. We don't know what.
Yeah.
As far as 7-3 coming off of, he's already been shown that he's brittle in his short NBA career already.
Yeah.
We don't know what he got going on. So that's another thing that the Knicks moved on for too. And then also, when it comes to the Knicks getting KD, Scott Perry, he's been an underrated GM or whatever his role is with the Knicks, because he drafted KD when he was in Seattle. He also drafted Oladipo in Orlando. Like, he was a part of the Detroit franchise from 03 to 08. Mm-hmm. So he took y'all to, what, like 5 Eastern Conference championships, one title?
Yep, six straight.
As much as people don't like the Joe Dumars era, like, that was still a good era for the time he was there. So
the early Joe Dumar era.
Later
was horrible. I'm going to tell you
the
one move that fucked Joe Dumars up.
You're not getting mellow?
Josh Smith.
Ooh, giving him $90 million. Yes, free agent.
That's
that
what
crazy.
Messed up Detroit.
That was his fate. That was like that sealed his fate after that. They were like, yeah, you got to go. Because he gave Charlie Villanueva a lot of money. He gave Ben Gordon a lot of money when he didn't deserve to get a lot of money. The Iverson trade for Chauncey
Ben
Billups.
Gordon.
Like, Chauncey Billups for Allen Iverson. Like, all the moves he made post, the championship was just like, dude. Mm-hmm. I think he held on to Tayshaun Prince and Rasheed and Ben
too long.
He should have traded them off while it was hot, while they were still hot. Maybe could have still kind of kept the franchise
one
afloat.
Year early than one
year
too late.
Yeah, yep. Rip Hamilton, he should have traded them off. By the time he gave Rip Hamilton and all them, they was damaged goods. Tayshaun Prince, they was damaged goods. So,
Wait a minute. So what are the Knicks going to do with Dennis Smith Jr. if Kyrie come there?
I think he come off the bench.
Either that or you trade him again.
But I wouldn't see why you would want to trade him, because he's got a rookie contract, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's only making less than $5 million.
But here's the thing, you could probably get more value for him from like a team like Phoenix. They desperately need a point guard.
Yep.
They got other pieces like Josh Jackson that I'm pretty sure they'll be willing to give up. You know what I'm saying? Hell no, they ain't getting no Ayton.
Oh, you mean give up?
Give up from Phoenix's side.
I got you.
You know what I'm saying? Obviously, they gave up on Marquise Chris already, and he's in Houston. So some of these other young guys, they're willing to let go.
But some of their point guard, well, they're rookies. Like, I can't say his name, but it starts with the O.
What team?
The Suns.
They ain't got nobody. They don't have
a point guard, but they got young talent who may develop. I don't know.
They have three young talented players,
which I like: Ayton, Josh Jackson, and Booker.
Exactly. The rest of that is boo boo.
That's why LeVar Ball won his son. If not to New Orleans, Lonzo, you want him to go to Phoenix.
He can't dictate where he wants to go. He don't have that leverage.
But he said that he like if he want his son to play anywhere besides Lakers, it's Phoenix.
You know where else I would like Lonzo to go to? Chicago. Him and LaVine, I think, could play really well with each other.
He said New York, Chicago. I don't know. I think it was just New York, Chicago, Phoenix.
I don't like him in Chicago.
Have you guys heard about the Bulls possibly trading Zach LaVine?
For who? Where?
I don't know. He's been
having a great bounce back year, man. He has. Because he was injured all last year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, out with the ACL.
He's been in and out this year, but yeah, when he's on the court, he plays well.
They don't give like comeback player for the NBA, do they?
They do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he would definitely probably get it. Yeah. He's been balling.
Hey, y'all know who actually almost looked like he wasn't going to live up to the billing, but I think he is going to shape out to be nice. It's Buddy Hill.
Yeah.
Buddy Hill.
Yes. Yes,
Ken,
man.
What year? What year is he?
3-5.
I thought he was a major bust.
A lot of people did.
When he was at Sacramento, he was drafted.
Yeah.
He was drafted relatively high for me.
Him and De'Aaron Fox and Bagley starting to pick it up.
Well, De'Aaron Fox is just the second year.
So. I know, but I'm just saying as a team, he got that dog in him, man.
I like Fox.
If they keep on this pace, they're gonna be nice, man.
Sacramento fine.
Yeah,
Sacramento
man.
Is
you
fine.
You said you wanted to talk about Milwaukee.
Y'all believe yet?
Believe what?
In the Bucks as
what game were you watching that made you think about that?
I just can't continue to ignore what they're doing.
Because they had a good game against Toronto, even though they almost like lost the lead. But they
are dominating the East, and some of it is not even looking close.
Here's the thing.
I just want to see if Giannis going to take the next step this postseason.
It's all postseason. For Giannis, and that's the reason why I still have a big question mark on him, because we've seen Giannis be almost as dominant, right? Like I think Giannis has kind of smoothing out his game a little bit more. And I think that has a lot to do with Bud. He knows how to attack.
Bud seems to be the difference.
Yes. And then also, the guys around him just have another year of experience. They're better. Chris Middleton is better than he's ever been. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Everybody's kind of growing together, right? Like I've always said, you want to buy a championship or you want to develop your championship. Personally, if I'm a GM, I'd rather develop my championship. It's going to take time. But once it manifests, how can you stop it? Because that camaraderie and chemistry, that is something that we cannot take for granted. Part of the reason why Golden State is Golden State is because of that chemistry and that bond that they have. That's what makes them special. It's not the talent. It's the fact that they know how to play well together, that they have the right coach to put them in those situations to play the way that they play. Milwaukee finally has that. They have all of the pieces.
Right.
Right? But can Giannis do that in the playoffs? And that's my biggest question. If he can answer that, right? And remember, it's not if you lose with me. It's how you lose. You lose on the last second game winner. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You lose with, you know, unfortunate things happen. But you can't lose how Philly lost to Boston.
No, I want to make sure that I'm not overlooking them, right? If I'm thinking like you, but like, they're just, you know, if I'm not looking at them like Toronto, right? Mm-hmm. It looks good in the regular season. But what happens when? So when I look at the Bucks and when I think about the Bucks, I still have that same feeling. But then I think, okay, what is the X factor? Bud. Mm-hmm. Bud took a team of random people in Atlanta to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Had made them 4 All-Stars.
Right.
Right.
What was he missing?
Giannis.
Right.
He didn't have a guy. He didn't have the guy.
So now he has a guy. Mm-hmm. Giannis didn't have a coach. We can probably say that now that with Jason Kidd out.
I like
Jason
Kidd, but he's
Jay
not Kidd,
I did like Jason Kidd, but we've seen the changes in this team with Bud. So we see Bud's impact. So could Bud be the missing piece and not Giannis?
No. And I like the fact that you brought up Toronto, right? Because if you compare them, they're very comparable. You're talking about size, length, ability, how they want to attack, right? But look at the differences in the roster. Kyle Lowry, to me, is better than Eric Bledsoe. Valanciunas is better than any big that they have on that squad. And then you're talking about multiple depth in terms of Siakam.
There's still a playoff Lowry, too.
There is a playoff Lowry, but what the hell is playoff Eric Bledsoe? Like, we've seen Eric Bledsoe mail it in, bruh. Like Eric Bledsoe is a non-factor, and I would take Kyle Lowry in Game 7 of the finals. And you know how I feel about Kyle Lowry over Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah, that's true.
So Eric Bledsoe, I mean, Kyle Lowry is way better than Eric Bledsoe. Regular season and
maybe
in the
my
postseason.
Man's the rookie of the year, former rookie of the year.
Malcolm Brogdon.
Maybe he might be like in clutch moments. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, I feel.
Because he's been playing good this season.
No, I feel. Yeah. And I like Malcolm Brogdon. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? To me, that's the equivalent for Toronto's OG Anunoby. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But I just think that Toronto has more experience going further than those Bucks players. I believe in Kawhi way more than Giannis right now. Mm-hmm. And I also believe in the defense that Toronto has versus Milwaukee. And I also believe in the three-point shooting that Toronto has versus Milwaukee. And I think that that's going to be their Achilles heel. I think that if they don't make a move for a real point or a different point guard outside of Eric Bledsoe, and they can't get more shooting on that squad, that's going to be their downfall. Point guard play and three-point shooting. And like I said, it's not if you lose, it's how you lose. Giannis got to look like that fucking MVP. And if you lose, you lose. He got to get the 20 points. He got to get the 12 and a half rebounds. He got to look like the most dominant player on. You know what he got? He got to look like LeBron in Cleveland going up against Boston and Paul Pierce in there. That's what he got to look like. And if he lose to that, it is what it is. But I think that as good as Milwaukee is, in the playoffs, certain things will get exposed. And Bud is arguably, I'm not saying he is, but he's arguably the best coach in the East. Arguably.
He'll probably be going to be probably the coach for the Eastern All-Stars.
I think it's a good fit for him, for Bud.
It is.
I think
it
he
is.
Was he could very he's well
be his roster. Yeah, he was missing that guy in Atlanta.
I just need to watch more. I need to watch more Bucks. I need to go on League Pass and watch some of their past games.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for playoffs. I'm like, I just want to see what Giannis is going to do in these playoffs, man. Like, I want to see him take his game to the next level. Like, I'm hoping that he should. You know, I hope he can take his game to
the next level. I like the part of the season after the All-Star, because that's when you kind of get more playoff basketball.
Yeah, because it's like, it's coming down to the nitty-gritty and stuff, and so, you know, you about to go through that home stretch, for position and everything. I know Milwaukee, even if it end up being a tie, they'll clinch, you know, first seed if it comes down to them in Toronto, because they beat Toronto more times this season, you know, in the season series. So it's going to be
interesting. What's the record against who? The Celtics?
I don't know. I have to look that one up. But
you said who?
The Bucks record against the Celtics.
I don't know. But I know that the Celtics are only five games out of number one.
Yep.
And they're only two games out of number two. And Philly is only 5.5 game backs out of number one. So it can get interesting, man.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I think the Pacers start to fall off.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they've been playing.
And Victor
gone. Since
and
Vic, yeah.
And Victor's gone.
Victor got hurt. You know, obviously they're riding that emotional wave to try to play for his brother. But
at the end of the day, it's not going to be enough.
Yeah, it's not going to be enough. And I could see them damn near falling out of the playoffs. You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't want
to
see
damn near.
Out, yeah.
Yeah, I said damn near.
They're going to fall to the bottom.
7-8. They're going to fall to 7-8.
They're 5 right
they'll
now.
They'll fall out.
The Bucks versus Celtics.
They're 4.
They're both 1-4.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ooh, man.
Pacers 4. Philly's 5. They're only a half game out from the 4th spot. Philly is. I think when I see the Nets in playoff contention, I'm like, what the hell?
Hey.
But they've been balling, though.
They've been balling. Okafor, man. Okafor.
And Russell been balling too, man.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
The point guard that we
no longer D'Angelo Bussell anymore.
Right. The point guard that we drafted some years back, he's injured right now, but he's balling. Stan Van Gundy drafted him. Spencer Dinwiddie. He's balling, man. Yep.
Speaking of,
and I'm
balling.
Like, wow. I'm like, we had him, and Stan Van Gundy didn't develop.
Which makes me wonder if he's messing up Stanley Johnson too, or if he messed up Stanley Johnson, and if Stanley Johnson elsewhere.
Stanley's playing a little better under Dwayne right now.
And every
now,
time
but
I
it's
see
just
him,
the first year, I know because at the, like what people said, the 3-5,
At this point, he should be our wing guy. Yeah. Like, he should be our guy.
He should be a borderline all-star player.
Reggie Bullock shouldn't come in and take your minutes. You know what I'm saying?
Unless he was underdeveloped under Stan Van Gundy. That could slow his lead time. But I want to let's talk about the Hawks, man, because it took a minute. But that white boy.
Huter.
Man.
But remember, I told you in the draft, I told y'all on this podcast, the Hawks have an identity and a direction. They know how they want to play.
Yeah.
Did you see the evolution? John Collins.
Yes, John Collins is stepping up.
The only two people.
I liked him last year, too.
The only person that is maybe he hit his ceiling is Taurean Prince.
Yeah, and that injury showed that.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave Hooter a chance to step in.
Exactly. And I'll put it to you like this.
So, Prince, get out of here.
As much as I would like Zion to the Hawks, because it don't matter where Zion go, it's box office, and he's going to impact that team right away. I just think he's that damn good. I've been saying it for years now. But who I would rather have there is
Cam. Reddish.
I was telling my coworkers today. And
I'm glad you brought that.
Yo, Cam, in this draft, next year as a rookie, Cam is going to average the most points per game. Over R.J. Barrett, over Zion, over Nazir Little, over all these guys, over Ja Morant, over all these guys. I think Cam Reddish is going to average the most points per
game. And I've been wanting to talk about that because Zion is box office. He's the brand name. He's the one everybody's talking about. But people are saying that Cam or RJ are the best players in the draft.
Well, people are saying, I think now it's coming out more and more, Zion might not be the consensus top pick if someone does get the number one slot. Like, it's only a few teams that are like, I think the big market teams really want him to be.
Yeah, because
it brings more of a team. But for the small market teams or whatever, they're looking at
RJ. He doesn't look like a franchise changer to me.
He does, because he doesn't to me either.
Nah.
I like him more.
He's Sean Kemp.
Oh my God. What am I hearing?
He's an athletic freak. For me, I think he's more Sean Kemp and less Dominique Wilkins.
You are.
Because for me, it's just I'm looking at his game and I'm like, if you can't dunk, what can you do?
I mean, he can do other stuff.
I'm talking about NBA level.
I'm talking about NBA. Look.
His athleticism is off the charts. That's why I think he's more Sean Kemp.
But as far as
can you build a team around Zion?
Yeah, like can you?
No.
Okay. What are we talking about?
Because of how much he impacts everything. He impacts how much you can charge a hot dog for. No.
Because he can eat them all.
No.
You stupid.
Oh, yeah. After fat shaving.
Look. What I'm saying is, I think it'll be difficult to build around Zion being the best player on the championship team.
Okay.
Because he doesn't have a skill set that is clearly defined, right?
So like, how is the franchise changing then?
Because he's a franchise changer because he checks off more boxes than everybody else.
He's a box office attraction. What box? Sure.
Rebounding, blocking, one-on-one defense, help defense. Rebounding, playmaking? Like, who else in this draft, outside of Ja Morant, but that's a little, because he's a point guard. He's supposed to do all that. But outside of that, we're talking wing players and also forwards. Who does more than Zion does?
I don't know. I'm not.
If whoever has number, if they pick Zion, I wouldn't like belittle them for it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, don't expect him to be the next LeBron or the next, you know.
So I definitely think it depends on who drafts him, right? If the Cleveland Cavaliers draft this guy, it's going to be a disappointment because there's nothing around him to help elevate his game. Fuck out of here. If he gets drafted by Chicago, that's a problem. That's a problem.
With that dysfunctional
Dunn, Levine, yeah, Markkanen.
I'm thinking talent. The front office is – they've been asked with Jordan, bruh. They have never been the model of consistency when it comes to front office organization.
They would definitely compete with Zion.
But they would compete with Zion.
Yeah.
You should have – talent-wise.
He would add to what they already have, yeah.
The Knicks, right?
Oh, yeah, he's selling tickets. He's selling tickets.
You know what I'm saying? Oh, because, yeah, because now you got Kevin Knox. Then you don't know what free agents that you're going to get in addition to Zion.
And you could also use him as a trade bait, too.
What I'm saying about Zion's game is that he elevates everybody else. He's that type of player. He's not himself going to take you over the top himself. He's not LeBron, right? But he can elevate.
But he was being billed as LeBron. And I'm glad they're starting to walk that back.
But on this very so publication here, I've always said he's not athletically, he's LeBron, but he does not have LeBron's game. He just doesn't. He as good as a passer Zion is, he don't got that feel that LeBron got for passing. And you can't teach it. You know what I'm saying? What LeBron does, what the best passers in the game, what Ben Simmons does, you can't teach it. Mm-hmm. He's not Ben Simmons passing, but he's a willing playmaker. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I love Zion. But I agree with you. It depends on where he goes. But the majority of the teams that's drafting early have other talent. They like let's look at the worst teams. Yeah, right?
Phoenix, Chicago,
Knicks. New York, the Hawks. Oh, yeah. Like I said, you're looking at the Grizzlies. They got to get rid of some people. Let's just say maybe the Timberwolves. You know, can get up there. You know what I'm saying? The Orlando Magic. You know, him and Mo Bamba. What rebounds you getting? What are you doing out here? You ain't getting no shots nowhere near the rim. You're not getting no rebounds.
I just don't trust the organization. But yes.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
But yes.
I don't trust the organization. At that point, I'm trading Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, they got to make a trade. They got to get rid of Vucevic.
How long have I been saying Orlando?
I know,
need to make
but
a trade?
they need to play Mo Bamba. What are they doing? Jaren Jackson Jr. playing well in Memphis. They in PT. Mm-hmm. Put Mo Bamba out there.
So, you know, like to me, again, I think it depends on who drafts him. But should he be overall number one? Depends on who drafts. But for the Hawks, we got a little bit on Zion's train.
Yeah, I know.
If they get Cam Reddish, you talking about – and they saying that he's not done growing. They say he's going to get taller. So, you talking
what
about
is he now?
6'8", almost 6'9"?
I say he's like T-Mac-like, right?
Yes. Yeah. And you know why I say he's like T-Mac-like? When he – both – Zion and R.J. Barrett are averaging over 20 points a game. You know how much Cam Reddish is game?
Mm-mm.
18. As a third wheel in college. 18 points a game is a leading scorer on the majority of other programs. And he's doing that as a catch and shooter. He don't handle the rock, but he can handle the rock. We don't see his ability to get to the rack because they don't ask him to. I am telling you, this guy, offensively,
is probably the
most complete player in terms of scoring the basketball. I think R.J. Barrett is a little bit better. I think he's more James Harden-esque. Like, he got more playmaking. He got a little bit more juice in
him.
He's
definitely
on that
more
side.
NBA skill ready, I think, out of the
day. R.J.?
R.J. Yeah. Like, watching him play, I'm like, okay, that guy is, like, NBA skill ready.
Right now.
Right now.
He can go and you can rely on him to make plays. Yeah. He's going to make the rookie mistakes. Rookie.
Yeah.
But you can rely on him to make the plays you need. But Cam Reddish, in terms of scoring ability, he's one of these guys that it don't even look like he's playing hard because he's that smooth. I'm telling you, if the Hawks draft this guy, the Hawks are going to be competing for a championship. I don't want to say like sooner rather than later, but they have their golden state.
I say you would give him about –
3 to 5.
The third year. Trae Young's third year when he fills out, when he understands the NBA game more. Because he still have some pretty good moments.
He do. Nah, he does. He do.
Yeah.
He's the second best rookie in this draft class.
Yeah,
right?
So far, this year.
And every day I look at the box score. I don't watch all of the Hawks games, but I do look at the box score almost every day. Even when he struggles from shooting, I think the last game that they just played,
he
went 2 for 10 or 2 for 13 from the field. They only had like 11 points or something like that. 10 assists. He's consistently getting double. So to me, what did I say coming in? It wasn't his shooting that made him special. It was his playmaking. So you start to give him a guy like Zion. You give him a guy like Cam like that is what's going to make him dangerous. And then the fact that he can shoot from 30
and then it'll make the Hawks more dangerous because now he doesn't have to handle the scoring load.
And then he can
do what he does best.
And then can you imagine running a fast break? You got Huter, Cam Reddish, possibly Zion, and John Collins.
And Huter's putting up 4 or 5 threes a game. He can hit five. Okay. Hit five last night.
And you see how big that white boy is? He big out there, man.
The white boy's coming back to the NBA, man. It's a resurgence.
Yeah, because you don't have to use, you can use skill and not athleticism.
Yeah, man. Ain't coming back, man. I like Hooter, man, and he fills out the box score. That's the other thing. He's getting assists. So, he's getting rebounds.
So in the Golden State model, who is he?
Clay. He Clay. That white boy can shoot, man. That white boy can shoot, and I'm glad he got his moment. He started off slow, but when Taurean Prince got hurt, he opened up the door. And Dembry can take Taurean Prince spot because they're basically the same guy. Get Taurean out of here because Hooter's playing way better.
I'm not paying Taurean.
Nah.
I'm not paying him.
Nah.
Trade him before he hits restricted free agency.
Yep.
So good. He can help somebody else. Thank you for your service.
Because Cam, well, he would be a small four, right?
Two, three, just like Hooter.
So, yeah, man, so you got, yeah. So yeah, you can interchange them. So you got Trey, Hooter, Cam, you got John Collins, and then they already got Detman at the five, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got this other guy who I don't know what he is yet, Spellman.
And me and you was going back and forth, right? It was Dallas Mavericks trade. It's looking better and better for the Hawks. Because I think Dallas is out the playoffs right now, right? Let me look.
Yeah, they're out the playoffs.
I think so, yeah.
And then they're number 12. So I believe that their pick is top five protected.
Yeah, it is.
So if they get number six, right?
Yep.
The Hawks have their own draft pick. They're still one of the worst teams.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Top five pick.
You know what I'm saying? Hold on. Let me see where the Hawks are.
The Hawks should be a top five pick.
12. So both teams are at the 12th position, right? Hopefully Hawks get top three pick, right? Because even if we don't get Zion, that's cool. But I'm just telling you, if we can get Cam Reddish and somebody, oh my God. I'm telling you, the Hawks, they won that trade. I don't care what nobody says, Luka is super nice. They won that trade.
Yeah, Luka is, he's box office. They've done a good job of branding him. He's done a good job of branding himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the kid can play. I love him.
Mm-hmm.
And this came to my mind. Forget the Hawks trade, because we already know what that is. Did the Suns mess up? Because they wanted him too.
Yeah, and their head coach coached them overseas.
Like, he was, because everybody was talking about Luka
instead of Luka.
Yeah.
Is Luka the look 2020 hindsight? Is he the number one pick
in this? But they were saying he was the number one pick coming into that draft. But I think it turned out it became more of a need thing, and I think Aiden propelled himself, and it's hard to get a big man like that.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing.
And they already had Booker.
That's what I was going to say. So obviously, we've seen how Dennis Smith and Luka played out, right, in the backcourt. Mm-hmm. Could we say maybe Devin Booker and Luka wouldn't have been that great together?
If Luka's playing point.
Which, de facto, he's going to be, right?
Booker could have played more off ball. But Booker, balling, he dishing out like five assists. Mm-hmm. Anywhere from 6 to 8 assists a game.
Personally, I'll still take Aiden. Because if you look around the league, right, every team has a big man. They just may have a different version of a big man.
The big men are coming back.
I said that years ago.
In a different way.
In a different way, right? They all have different skill sets. You got rim runners. You got defenders. You got traditional big men that
But now we got offensive bigs.
Exactly. Yes. And to me, when you look at some of the best teams, Golden State with Boogie, you know, obviously I don't know if he's going to be there, but Joel Embiid's of the world, you know. DeAndre Ayton just don't grow on trees like
that. They don't.
You know, and he's special. Maybe he's not as special as Luka is right now today, but that man's special. And you have a little man. What do I always say? If you got a guard guy out here, go get that man a big man. Go get him a big man. Because that is the toughest duo to overcome. Because you got a guy that's killing you out here, and then you got a guy that can kill you down here.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? But if you got two guys out here, we see it with Dame and CJ.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You can shut that down. Yep. You can slow that down.
Yeah. And they thought Nurkic was going to be the guy to help, you know, give us some interior scoring. But
and Nurkic ain't DeAndre Ayton. I still take DeAndre Ayton.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I like Ayton. And I think for the Suns, with the roster that they had, it was a good pick. I mean, obviously, with everything that you know, Luka's doing, I mean, everybody's looking like, dang, did we mess? Did we make the right pick?
You know? That's everybody.
Because nobody saw this. Like, I knew he could play, but I didn't know he was going to be a star.
Yeah, me too.
Better yet, I didn't know he was going to be a superstar because I think he's going to be a superstar.
1,000%. I was like, if he gets his shooting, like, the only thing I can see him increase is his shooting.
Like, his step back is already mean.
Exactly. So if he consistently can do that, we might be talking about maybe in 2-3 years. Well, I'll say 3-4 years, he'll be the top five player.
Yeah, he's going to be an MVP candidate real early. Mm-hmm. I would say in this draft class, he's going to be the first person that's getting votes for MVP. 1,000%. Easy. As easy.
Yeah, because Dallas winning, right? Like, it's not like they like.
They win games, but.
Yeah, they're number 12. Like,
they are?
Yeah, they're 12.
Oh, so they're not a playoff team?
Nah.
Oh,
and I don't think they're going to be a playoff team. Yeah. Especially after the trade. Now you got to get reacclimated with everybody.
Man, Luka got some swag to him, too.
He do.
That's what I like about him.
I know, yeah.
He sure does, man.
Because he already been playing with grown ass men.
Yeah, so I love the way he walks, the way he carries himself.
This is what he's seeing playing against. I mean, you know, maybe the skill level is a little better, but like he's like, I ain't played with grown ass men since I was 15 years old. So this is nothing for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like him, too. I like Luka, man.
You know what Luka proves? It is when I always say you got to get basketball players into professional basketball early on because
you sound like Mark Cuban.
Colin Cowherd said this a couple of weeks back, and I 100% agree. Mm-hmm. He said he went to a Laker game, and it was when LeBron was out, and he said the NBA has a lot of talent but not a lot of leaders. Luka's a leader. And the reason why is because he's been playing with grown-ass men, and he separated himself. Yeah, you could be 35, and I might be 17, but I'm the leader of this right here. You know what I'm saying? And you learn that. And I think that our system here in America doesn't build up leaders. Because you look at the AAU system, right? Everybody bands together. It's basically what we're seeing in the NBA now. Oh, you my homie, let's go hoop together, this, that, and the third. We just building talent. Like, but I'm not a leader. I'm not a leader of men.
Yeah.
Right? And then even the coaches in the AAU system, they're not that great. You don't really get great coaching until you get to college. And then when you're in college, you're only there 1 year. Right? Yeah. So we're not really building leaders. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the problem with American basketball. That's why I say, you know what? If we identify that these kids can be prodigies or they're that good, get them playing. We need to have a real minor league system. Get them in the G League at 13. Get them in the G League at 14.
Yeah.
Playing against grown-ass men. Don't forget school. At the end of the day, what do you go to school for? To make money. To be a slave to a fucking company. I'd rather be a slave to the NBA than a slave for who I'm working with right now. I think all four of us would sit here and be like, I'd rather have an NBA contract, even if it's not the G League. You know, like, and they're starting to see it. They're saying that elite talent, right, coming out of high school will give you a six-figure contract. Mm-hmm. You damn right. You damn right. But you know what? You need to do it even earlier. You need to do it at 12, 13, 14. Because there's some of these kids, like I told y'all years ago, Zion physically in the NBA could have played at 16, 17. Physically, he wasn't mentally ready or nothing like that. But you put him in the G League and develop.
LeBron was too.
I wouldn't start as early as 12. I would say high school. I would say 15, 16.
Yeah, don't get him while they're in middle school. Yeah. Goddamn.
But what I'm saying is,
what is this, China?
You know what I'm saying? I truly believe that you can develop more leaders if you did that. To me, and you can still develop the skill set. These kids play way more basketball from the time that they're like 8 years old to before they get to high school than Michael Jordan did. You know what I'm saying? Throughout his high school and college career, you just play more basketball minutes, which also I think attributes to some of these injuries that we're seeing. There's a lot more injuries. What's the answer? They just play a lot more minutes before they even get to the league now.
Can we have a moment of silence for Kyle Kuzma?
Oh, man.
Boogie.
Yep.
You got to make a business decision.
Yeah.
Oh my God, like, bro, I just wanted to highlight that.
DeMarcus just looked at him, just stare. Oh, man.
Well earned.
Yeah, well earned. I'm just kind of glad he ain't jumped because it would have been 20 times worse. It would have been DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah.
A couple years.
That was the worst dunk I've ever seen.
Brandon Knight
still got them rings around his head.
Yes.
That might have been the worst dunk I've ever seen.
Shout out to the top five player in the league, Embiid and the Sixers. Mm-hmm. You know, taking down the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
They look sloppy, though, that fourth quarter.
Who, Philly? Yeah, they.
I got some concerns.
That's where they. And remember, I said it last year after how they lost to Boston. That's what they need to adjust. They need to get better in clutch and
execution.
And execution.
There were no plays. They were just jacking up shots.
Brett Brown.
At this point, I'm gonna give more. I'm gonna give more on Brett Brown. Right. Okay. Last year, I gave it to the youngins. Now it's a little bit more Brett Brown, but Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid need to get more so on the same page down the stretch.
Yep.
They do. And Ben Simmons, this season,
you're letting him have a pass this season, right?
Who?
Ben Simmons.
Not really. Because the thing is that he needs to garner a 15-foot jumper.
He knew that after last season.
Exactly.
He's hanging out with the Kardashians.
That should have been the only thing he'd have been doing all season.
He is with Kendall, right?
Mm-hmm. As soon as
he's smashing Brittany Renner on the side.
Yeah.
She bad, but.
They saying, soon as they got eliminated by Boston, he should have been at the gym the next day.
The next day shooting, right?
I know. He's shooting the wrong damn shots.
He is.
Nah, so man. He needs to do that this offseason.
And that's
to,
my, well.
1,000 jumpers a day.
But it's awesome. Going with the whole Philly's.
Or more.
My whole notion of that. Philly does not really develop their talent.
That's on Ben Simmons, bro.
It is on Ben. But at the same time, Brett Brown got to put some fire on him, though.
You got to want it as a player.
I can't tell you how to play. I can just put you in position to make the plays.
Right.
And what Brett Brown is doing for Ben has to take advantage of being open at times.
Because Embiid has gotten better. He can shoot threes when he came in the league.
Right.
He's gotten a lot better.
What you want.
And he's developing a back-to-the-basket game.
He's always had back-to-the-basket game.
He always had back-to-the-basket
game. Okay, maybe he's using it more.
Days, yeah.
He's just better.
Maybe that one is for Ben.
You got players that's even offering to work with Ben Simmons, with jumpers. Like, look, man, come see me in the summer. Like, you got guys that want to get... That's all he needs.
Because you're talking about if he has a consistent 15, 18-footer right now, he's top 10.
Yes, and he can elevate top the Sixers 10. Too.
Yes.
Like, they can be a 2-1 seed if he developed that 15-footer.
You know who I always say that you need to look at when you have a young player coming into the league that can't shoot? Tony Parker.
Yeah.
When Tony Parker came into the league, he couldn't shoot threes. Even though he don't shoot threes like that now, but you can't leave him open.
Right.
He'll make it. He had a consistent
Rose.
D. Rose.
Oh, yeah.
You got to have that in-between game.
Yeah.
You got to have
it in-between start off with? That floater.
The floater.
Once they get a floater that's unstoppable, then they start getting more confident in their shot.
You know, and to me, that's what Ben Simmons needs. He don't need no three-point shot.
Right, he don't need to be out here like Steph Curry, Kyrie, like.
He don't need that until about 5-6 years into the league. Yeah. Like LeBron. Mm-hmm. Like, cause it took LeBron a minute to be a consistent 3-point shooter. It wasn't really till Miami.
Yeah,
where he was became a consistent 3-point shooter.
Yeah, a respectable 3-point
exactly.
shooter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we're talking, how, that was 8 years into the league.
Right. So, Ben, he don't need the three ball. Just get that 15 to 18.
If you
get that
15 and a back 18, to the ba- a back to the basket fadeaway or something that you can take advantage of the being that
guards.
Damn big.
Yeah,
exactly. The double team come this way. You already know he can
pass. Yeah, because he gets in the post and then he does a little scoop hook shot. It's like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. But he has no post game. Before we get out of here, what do you guys make of Kobe's comments? Did you hear what he said about Harden?
Yeah, he can't win championship that way.
What's wrong with that?
Maybe I said that off camera, but I swear I was like.
No, you said it.
Okay.
I think we all said it.
Okay, he's going to wear out. He's going to wear out. The way they playing ball, the style that they playing ball, James Harden is going to burn out. Because now you talk about 7-game series, teams that's adjusting to you, and you coach, you know, because what we always say, it comes down to matchups and coaching in the playoffs. So when that comes down to that, Harden is going to run out of gas. You cannot win a championship the style of ball they playing. Like Kobe said, what he's doing is remarkable. It's great. But come postseason, when it's money time, when the lights is on, when the lights is brighter, they're not going to.
People said it was hating because it was Kobe.
It's not hating. He's real.
Because the way his style of play was.
But he sees the game differently now that he's retired and he's learned from his mistake.
But his game was also different in a sense that with James Harden, like Kobe was a scorer, right? Where he didn't have to pound the rock to get his shot.
Yeah, right.
The ball can move elsewhere, and then it comes to me, and then I may shoot 9 out of 10 times.
Right, right.
But James Harden controls the ball 95% of the time. Yeah. The only other 5% of the time is when CP's in the game.
Right, and then wasn't there a stat I remember seeing where they say he had, like, so many points being unassisted, like he didn't have no
like nobody assisted him. Yeah,
like 300
points.
Yeah, see, it's crazy.
And that's the main difference between James Harden and Kobe. You can assist to Kobe,
right?
You can't assist to James
Harden. Yeah.
Like how long can you sustain that?
You know how many coaches gonna pick up on that come playoff season? You know what I'm saying? Like,
and
that's
here's the thing too, man. Look, we're talking about a guy that damn near averages 20 free throw attempts a game.
Right,
that's getting cut in half in the playoffs. No.
It may stay the same or not.
In the playoffs?
More. In the playoffs, yes.
Nah.
They don't call them ticky-tack fouls in the playoffs.
Not as many, but he puts so much pressure on referees that they're going to call some of them shits. But my biggest thing is you can't average 15 to 18 three-point attempts.
Right, and that's why people are...
You shoot too many threes.
Yes, and that's why people are...
he's not efficient at all.
What did Kobe say that they're it's not hating, but they're kind of undermining what he's doing? Because you know you're shooting 15 threes a game, mm-hmm. and you're shooting 15 free throws.
Mm-hmm.
Like
you're supposed to get 30 points.
Yeah, like that's not getting to the line the way he does is special. But come on, man, I can't be impressed by that. But if you did it the way Kobe did it, or you did it the way LeBron does it. Like all over the court, mm-hmm. that's something different. Or even kind of the way Giannis does.
But I'm gonna tell you what's gonna be a major contributing factor to that team. Kenneth Faried.
Yeah, he has made an impact. Yeah. Yes,
that was the perfect type pick. Player.
Talking
for
about DeAndre, if when the Knicks buy out DeAndre, he could go down there too.
Yeah. More of the same, like what?
Yeah, because they already got Capella.
Come on, he's not a change.
But Faried was the good pickup.
Because Faried is more skillful around than Capella is. Capella is literally a rebounder, shot changer, because he's not really a shot blocker like that, and rim runner. He catch lobs. That's mm-hmm. it. That's essentially what DeAndre Jordan does. And Clint Capella shoots way better free throws than DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan to me is a liability for that team. He does not give them a different look. Kenneth Faried gave him a different look. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Now, DeAndre Jordan, there's multiple teams, playoff teams, that he can go to and be a major impact to. But the Rockets ain't it.
That's so crazy.
The Rockets ain't it.
DeAndre Jordan's just falling off the map.
Yeah, I mean, he's been leaving for a
minute. I mean, he's still doing his thing, but I mean, he was the man when he was in you know, LA mm-hmm. with Paul and
so
Blake.
So where do you think DeAndre Jordan can go?
Mm-hmm.
Gotta look at the teams again.
Man, bro. Let me.
That he would actually help, like, get over the hump, like playoff teams.
Playoff teams. Let me see. So the Heat, the Hornets, the Nets, the 76ers, the Pacers, the Celtics, the Raptors, and the Bucks. I think he can go to the Bucks.
Yeah, they don't have a big man.
They do.
He'll clog up the
Robin pool. Lopez. Nah. No, or Brooke.
Yeah,
Brooke Lopez.
Brooke Lopez.
I was getting confused.
And Thon Maker.
He hasn't been playing. Yeah, I know
he wanna trade.
That's crazy. Yeah, because he ain't getting clocked.
He played, which is crazy because he played a lot last year.
Antonio.
Yeah, he could with Greg Pop.
Yep.
DeMarcus Rosen. Yep. Rudy Gay been playing good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he can help them.
LaMarcus don't like playing
center.
Yeah.
Yeah. His power forward is a natural position.
Looking at the rest of these playoff teams,
I don't really see much help.
Spurs is a great
Spurs.
Fit.
Yeah. If I'm him, I'm going to the Spurs.
And for the minimum too.
Yep.
He better get Boogie.
He's gonna get paid. He's gonna get the buyout.
Yeah. But from the Spurs perspective,
that's what Boogie did. Boogie called what he called the Warriors. Did he call Kerr, whoever the GM is, and basically so he got his own contract. Mm-hmm. Last thing, what do you think his comments on LeBron? You think he was sending a message to LeBron?
Who comments on LeBron?
Kobe. Because he was saying LeBron needs to get in the post. And that as he gets older. Like, we've been saying it for years. Everybody's been saying it. But it was interesting hearing Kobe kind of say that out loud. Mm-hmm. It was almost like, at some point, all of your athleticism stuff will go away. So you need to really get in the post and start bodying people.
I think it's fair. I don't think it's hating or anything.
No, like it that. Wasn't hate. Yeah. I just wondering if he was sending.
I think he's giving like advice.
Like advice through the media.
Yeah.
That's how I looked at it as.
Yeah. I don't think that there's nothing negative or malicious in those statements.
Because Kobe know his freakish, you know, his size, man. Like, he caused so many double. Because
he was talking about extending LeBron's career.
Yeah. His best basketball when he was playing was when he was in Miami and he was working out the post.
Yeah. But I think that the way that these Lakers are constructed, what he's doing is what they need to do to win.
You know, they do that every team he go to.
But to Nick's point, right?
I know. I'm just saying.
But the reason why LeBron can be more comfortable in the post is because of who?
Wade. Bosh.
And not even Bosh, but Wade. They don't have a Bosh.
No, they don't.
So, but D Wade was the reason why LeBron can go to the post like that. I don't have to dominate the wing, the perimeter like that. I got my guy. He could feed me. He could feed Bosh. He can make plays for others. He can finish around the rim. Like D Wade was the reason why LeBron was able to expand his game, and LeBron was the reason why Bosh had to expand his game. You know what I'm saying? Like, LeBron didn't have to play out of the post to be successful there. But to maximize those three, that big three, he had to get in the post more. And I want to say, those years, I think the most he ever operated out of the post was like 40% of the offensive plays. Mm. Like, he was out of the post in Miami. You know what I'm saying? So, can he get back to that? Yeah, but he gonna need some help out there. Like he's gonna need him a Kyrie, or you know what I'm saying? He's gonna need a guy that could take the pressure off of the perimeter. He don't have that right now. Yeah. It ain't Josh Hart, it ain't Lonzo.
Damn sure ain't Lonzo. Magic messed up taking him.
He alright, man. Lonzo gonna be alright.
Yeah, that's what we hope.
We've been saying that since he came in the league.
2 years. Give him the 3 to 5, man. Look, like, y'all, you frustrate me sometimes, Ken.
Get
you got to give
here.
These young kids 3 to 5 years before you can tell them what they really are.
I'm, more I think about them offering up all that stuff for AD, I kind of feel like they should hang on to him if they got to give up that much. But anyway, we'll see. Well, you know, we have 2 days until the trade deadline, so.
I still think if a deal isn't made now, he's not going to be a Laker until his contract's over.
Yeah, I can see that. Which may not be a bad thing.
For LeBron, it is. That's their nightmare.
They can still get another guy next year, and then they got AD coming to his third year. And
the young LeBron's in the 17th season.
They can get Kemba.
It'll be perfect then.
Because look, man.
Because now LeBron is on the tail end of his career. AD's coming there, who should be in his prime. The young kids done grown up. 3 to 5, Ralph. And now you already got another max player from last year. Sweet.
It ain't sweet when you're in the 17th year. It's not sweet. If you would have told me LeBron's in his 14th year, 1,000%. 17?
Yeah, he gets to that point where this is uncharted territory.
Exactly. How many players have we even seen play 20 years, right? And then once they get to 20, what does Dirk look like? What does Vince Carter look like? What does Jamal Crawford look like?
I mean, Vince Carter's still dunking.
Well, what does he look like? What does he look like? That man look 40, dog. Like, come on, man.
He ain't doing it. I'm just saying, at this point, they going to get what? Chris Middleton, Kemba Walker.
Hey.
Max deals.
I mean, ooh, hell no. Yeah.
Clay, they praying for Clay Thompson.
They are playing for Clay.
We'll see. We'll talk about and recap the trades that happened in the NBA in the next few days, next week on Dead End Sports. So that's it, man. We'll catch you guys next time. We out. Peace.